Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and in the fourth quarter of 97, we have Vince McMahon exploiting the dead, Sting looking like shit at the big event, and world champions jumping companies without doing the time-honored tradition. Good to see how much things have changed in 18 years.
I'm Carl Jones, and I turned another year older this week, and in celebration of that fact, I'm going to do the same thing to alcohol that Nick Bockwinkel did to class. I'm going to ooze it.
I'm G. John Chase, and actually right now bidding on something on eBay. It's one of Larry's shirts, you might recognize it. It's from this time period. It's the red one with all the watches over it. It'll look great with those Undertaker snakeskin trousers.
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke. After watching the Raws for the fourth quarter of 97, I will never, ever be involved in a court case involving Shawn Michaels. Not even as the defense specialist that I am, because in my opinion, Shawn has got nothing to defend.
This is the panel for the 60-second Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about the fourth quarter of 1997 in the Monday Night War next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 60-second Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Kieran O'Rourke.
Evening.
G. John Chase.
Larry.
And Carl Jones.
I'm another day closer to death.
And we are back this week for a show I've been looking forward to for quite a while now. It is the fourth quarter of 1997 in the Monday Night War timeline that we've been doing for a while now, covering from the start of October through to the end of the year. So much to discuss. As always, we have notes from the Wrestling Observer newsletters of the time. There's a myriad of notes that I've got here, 11 pages of notes to go through in this timeline. So much to discuss. If you haven't heard any of our previous timeline episodes, of course, you can go back to the archives at squaredcirclegazette.com and catch up. And of course, give us the old like, the thumbs up on Facebook, facebook.com/scgradio. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes if you listen to us for the first time. The last quarter three 1997 that we just did, because obviously the big story coming out at the end of that episode was that Bret Hart had been given the notification from Vince McMahon that they were going to breach his contract intentionally and gave him written permission to negotiate with WCW, which is where we are at the start of this timeline. The first note that we have, of course, is that due to the window in his contract, Bret Hart has to make the decision to stay with the WWF for another year or give notice that he's leaving by midnight on November 1st. So that is where we stand at the start of this one. So much to discuss. The first big story we're going to get to here in the timeline is, of course, bad news. It's October the 5th. Brian Pillman is found dead at 9 minutes past 1 p.m. Central Time on his bed at the Budgetel Motel in Bloomington, Minnesota. There were several bottles of pills, muscle relaxers, and painkillers, alongside one empty beer bottle, all found near his body when the police opened the door to try and find him. The death, at first believed to be from an accidental overdose of prescription painkillers, will apparently be listed as a heart attack due to natural causes while he was sleeping, with the theory that the painkillers he had taken may have kept him from waking up, which resulted in him dying in his sleep. So that's the word from the Observer on the death of Brian Pillman, which we mentioned obviously in previous episodes of the timeline, because you can kind of see bad things coming. Vince announces this in the pregame before Bad Blood, which we didn't see over here. There was no emotional connection for me with this one at all when it happened. I was just in kind of like a stunned thing of a wrestler dying on the WF watch. It just seemed like it wasn't real, to be quite honest. Like, I half expected Brian Pillman to do a running with a toe tag on or something like that in the main event.
You know, yeah, I would say, when watching it back, I kind of got that impression from the crowd as well. It was like, wasn't really fully believing it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this is going to be something wacky. He's going
to
pop out.
Oh, he's just trying to get out of the two matches he has to do on this show. Yes. He's going to get gold dust later on. Something like that. I didn't expect that it was real at all. So very jarring, obviously, and obviously horrifically tragic. There's not much more you can say on that point. But
was that still the official cause of death?
The official cause of death was listed as a congenital heart defect, which obviously was made worse by steroid and drug use through the course of his life. So,
just to echo the thoughts around the table, really, just the sense of a disconnect. I don't think the gravity of it sort of really struck me at the time at all. And I think, unfortunately, with this being one of the sort of the first casualties, if you like, of this quote-unquote war, and the first sort of really significant negative repercussions of what's been building up to this point.
I think, yeah, but I think with Pillman, it's also a bit of extenuating circumstances in terms of the business, because of what Pillman pushing himself with the injuries and the accident. You know, just look at his legs. He shrunk from the waist down. And
yeah.
The
way he would run and stuff like that. You could see.
The pain he was obviously in all the time, and just what he was felt he had to take to just get by and try and get to the level he thought, you know, he always strived to. In hindsight, you could see it coming, I think, which is the saddest thing, but. Mm.
The people who out there have read the Observer news story, which you can find quite easily on the internet these days, that Meltzer wrote in 2006, where Paul Heyman just outright told Kim Wood and like other people in the business that Brian Pillman's not going to be alive by the end of the year at this rate. So pretty harrowing.
Yeah.
Up until then, as far as I'm aware, you didn't really get that in terms of like an active wrestler like dying on watch. Basically, you'd have like someone like older who retired or something. I'm thinking like Andre was obviously a big one in 93, was it? This was the first one of it seems like quite a few now where they've died whilst, you know, the night before they were working. I don't know when you saying, when you describe in there what like happened to him, saying that because of the painkillers he couldn't wake up, and so that hence why he died in sleep. Well, a lot worse ways to go.
Oh yeah. In terms of the what actually came of this, Vince McMahon and I think it was the WWF's general counsel sent a letter out to all the Mark doctors and told them they were banned from the dressing room after this. WCW drug tested about 30% of the undercard wrestlers. Those who failed had to go to a 1-day counselling course to kind of dissuade them from the perils of drugs.
Course held by Mr. Mackey by any chance.
Might have been. Moving along now, of course, to that night we mentioned, October 5th, it is WWF Bad Blood on pay-per-view. 21,151 fans sell out the Keel Center in St. Louis, and 0.6 buy it for 165,000 buys. A fucking horrible show, which obviously you can kind of give him a bit of a grace for, because obviously the situation with Pillman dying. But as Dave Meltzer puts it, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker put on one of the greatest cage matches in the history of wrestling to save the show. I love this. And this is the start of a fantastic quarter for Shawn Michaels.
Oh, he's God.
Also, the debut of Kane, big news for you, Carl, on this show.
Yeah.
And I will say, for what seemed like such a fuck horrible angle on the surface, this couldn't have been done any better.
You know what? This whole quarter, Kane's alright in my
book.
He's
great! This angle is great! This is the peak of Kane. This is the thing we're going to talk about today. So, just moving on to the next light on Raw, obviously, Brian Pillman is still the big topic of discussion. We get a 10-bell salute to start the show, and the Melanie Pillman interview.
One of the more disgusting things I've seen, and that, you know, having seen a litany of disgusting things from that company over the years, this to me
a few days ago, as a matter of fact.
Including a couple of days ago. This is right up there.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was obviously the interview itself, but the way it was promoted,
the way
they're
hawking it all through the show,
the main event. It's like
coming up next.
Yeah,
a widow. Yeah.
Establishing shots inside the house before the interview.
Of Pillman with his son. Yeah, it's fucking horrible to see. There's a special place in hell for Vince McMahon for there. So Melanie, what are you going to do to support your family now? Question. Oh. That was fucking disgraceful. You know, this is the first time this had happened. You don't really give him any kind of grace for something like this, though.
Yeah, well, what is the thought process? Because it was damage limitation straight away. It was the heart. What caused it? It was the heart, but we don't know what it was. It's just Melanie herself alludes to the fact it's the business.
Yeah,
without saying so directly, but it was, what is the thought process behind this interview?
But the thing is, because we see it now with Guerrero, it's very much the sort of a tribute show, so all sort of focused on positives, trying to keep everything on sort of a pleasant tone. Whereas this, it's almost, it's very sort of seedy dramatisation, sort of, let's get an interview with the widow less than, you know, 24 hours later.
Yeah, I remember a cameo of this period of time from our dad, who again watched this episode and thought this was a complete acting job because of the way that the camera's just right in on Melanie's face. And it's like, that screams to how exploitative this felt and how sleazy it all came after your point, Carl.
It's just this thing of, like, it just comes across like Vince is just the most amoral piece of shit, I think. Unless, in Vince's mind, Pillman signed a contract. He has to get his money's worth. So damn it, if Pillman can't do it because he's dead, he'll get his wife to do it instead. That's probably what Vince was thinking.
During the show, other than that, of course, Bret Hart comes out and calls Shawn Michaels and Triple H homos. Obviously, this is in response to Shawn Hunter showing the curtain call footage, which is really weird. Carl, one of your favourite sayings, inside of baseball bullshit. Is exactly what this was. The crowd does not react to any of this.
No, they're completely silent throughout. It's during that Triple H Shawn Michaels phase of, you know, hands on the cheeks, mouth aghast, sort of no selling everything. It's over most of the audience's head. The only person who literally reacts to it is Vince. And it's the fact that this goes over not just the opening segment, carries on into the next segment, building to absolutely nothing until Bret comes out and cuts one of the more painful promos. And referencing the other two guys with them when China stood in the ring. It really, Shawn, once Bret leaves, then goes on to talk about how Bret has to work for his money every single night. And the fans are just sat there in silence, not knowing how to react to any of this.
His line is, Bret needs wrestling, but wrestling needs Shawn and Hunter. But and also, by the way, Brett also claims that you ran out of Diesel and Razor, his boyfriend's WCW.
The Kurt Angle stuff, and it's like an example, and we get a lot of it this quarter, of trying to put over Triple H as being on those guys' level, maybe. Hmm. It's like the gimmick for me is like, okay, this, you know, two guys in WCW and we're here. It's kind of like, you know, we're running both shows, kind of the click. It's all powerful, runs the wrestling business. And look, Triple H is part of it. He's not just this boring, bland mid-card. Well, he is. But taking him serious.
He's just the bag carrier. Yeah. The designated driver, as Kevin Nash called him himself.
In this particular time period, Sean, from a wrestling standpoint, is absolutely phenomenal. Character, the person, the man, doing the promos. I'm sorry, watching this, I was having a hard time watching a lot of Shawn Michaels' stuff. I was just like... he just got on my nerves. This is like bordering on X-Pac heat with me. This is, you know.
Oh dear.
This is just like
even
this,
I wouldn't go that far.
This was the thing where like, and it's the same when we start going to WCW. You know, it's with Hogan and Shawn, where it's just the same type of like me kind of attitude that just oozes through onto the screen. That everything has to be about them, otherwise they don't like it. And it's just it's unfortunate because Shawn was great at this time as a wrestler and being a heel, but there's just these little moments, and this is like one of them with the curtain call, where what does this benefit? It's only you that benefits this, because you want to go and mouth off about something that nobody really knows or really gives a shit about, and you can tell that by the reaction. Their segments get more and more tedious for me.
Shawn Michaels' heel character was a thing of beauty. Yeah, you're just wrong, you Bret Hart and Mark, one can only assume. The show's better when Bret's gone, because Sean is actually even more of a dick. He's a wonderful heel, an even better wrestler, and an even better human being. So take everything back.
Oh, fuck off.
Jim Cornette, this is first That's My Opinion promo. This one on the NWO. This is in response, obviously, to the Horseman sketch that happened in WCW in the prior quarter. With some great zingers here on Nash, Hall, X-Pac, and Eric Bischoff. In retrospect, they look great because they're hilarious. But at the time, it's so kind of... I guess it seemed kind of cutting edge.
Well, it seems so strange for someone to have, even if it's only for 3 minutes, to have such sort of freedom and creative license to spout whatever they want. You know, when you think Vince McMahon, you don't think freedom for the performer, do you? You know, someone who effectively, as far as TV is concerned, has only ever been a manager or occasional colour commentator, to give him the license to just sound off. Is quite rare, and may I say, in this instance, very refreshing.
Over on Nitro this night, October 6th, DDP Diamond Cutters Randy Savage on the concrete floor, and Savage does a stretcher job. The NWO vows revenge.
Yeah, it's pretty good little angle, this, and the commentators are laughing over this, because it's like, you know, shoes on the other foot. Over this little period now that we're going to go through, there's an absence of Nash.
Nash has a knee injury and is having knee surgery at this point, so he's out for a few months.
And so the one thing I was kind of noticing, and it starts with this show and goes through all the other ones, was like, man, Nash made the NWO look cool. Once Nash wasn't around, they just looked so freaking lame. Like, Hall was alright, and Six was alright as well, and Bagwell looks funny because he is a douche. But once Nash comes back, it kind of like suddenly improves, and it's kind of like, okay, so the kind of cool aspect of what the NWO is probably
Spook
indirectly through to Big Sexy. But in this segment, sorry, they were talking about, there's actually a really good moment from like Hall, where Hall actually kind of stops with the whole kind of like comedy shtick that he's been doing, and he's actually like quite serious, and he's pointing to Hogan. And Hogan looks like a little girl last. We need to fucking deal with this right now. I just thought that was a really nice moment of Hall, where it's just like, well, I think we all know really who's the intelligent one in this group.
Well, we'll come to how intelligent Hulk Hogan is later on in the podcast. But speaking of Kurt Hennig that you mentioned there, the main event is Kurt Hennig versus Chris Benoit, an outstanding match, says Dave Meltzer, with Hennig looking the best he has in probably 6 or 7 years. After the match, the NWO destroyed Benoit until Ric Flair, with his new face, made the save and chased Hennig out the building and did another classic interview with a lot of shoot comments, talking about how people had been trying to get him out of the promotion for 10 years and he was still there. Great stuff from the Nature Boy once again here.
Something that I just kind of noticed, like, he comes out, he chases after Kurt Hennig. Kurt Hennig runs off out of the building into the distance. Ric Flair decides, like, ah, fuck it, I'm gonna walk all the way back into the building. Then basically, almost might as well, steps over the beaten body of Chris Benoit, who's at ringside being helped by like medics, whatever, because he's just been beaten down, and then cuts his promo. And I'm just there looking at this.
Well, the horseman.
You were the horseman like a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, he had like, disbanded the group, so
yeah,
I guess
no,
he,
but like the
fucking hell. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Nitro did a 3.9 this week to Raw's 3.0, so those are pretty much where the ratings have sat for the last little while. Nitro doing very well. Raw hovering around that 3 mark, as we've seen. The next day, October 7th, Jeff Jarrett's WCW contract has expired. He was offered $300,000 a year to stay, but turned it down, and the general feeling is he's gone. There's a lot of speculation he's WWF bound, particularly with Jesse James changing his ring name back to The Roadie and turning heel this past week. Ahmed Johnson will be out 2 to 4 weeks after surgery on his hand. So Ahmed's on the shelf, keep that in mind.
There's a lot of dust on that shelf along with him.
Shaped like Ahmed. They are going to take the mask off Rey Mysterio Jr. in a mask versus title match against Eddie Guerrero at Halloween Havoc. The Mexicans had been strongly against Mysterio losing his mask. There had been office sentiment that the mask was keeping him from fully getting over in the United States.
Because he's
got a good look, it would help him, although many feel he looks so young without the mask on, he looked like a teenager and no one will take him seriously.
Looks like a fucking 9-year-old.
Well, I guess those people were right in the end.
Yeah.
We move now to the October 13th Nitro. Before the show, as a matter of fact, Eric Bischoff had a meeting with all the wrestlers and talked about attending Brian Pillman's funeral and asked that any wrestler who had a drug problem should go to him and the company would treat the problem like it was an injury. He said that on last week's Raw, they used the word ass 17 times and that WCW is going in the opposite direction of the WWF. He said that Six could no longer do the Bronco ride and the NWO guys would no longer point to their crotch because he wanted a clear differential between the two products. His explanation was that there are very few national advertisers that touch pro wrestling to begin with, and he was afraid the more lewd, harder-edged direction of the WWF would erode the advertising base for both companies. He claimed in the same meeting that the WWF would be out of business within 6 months, so not so accurate on that one, and that he was tired of all the whining amongst the wrestlers, saying they'll look back at this period in the future as one of the greatest times of their careers. He also said something to the effect that there were only 3 wrestlers in the dressing room that have ever put asses in the seats. They were Hogan, Piper, and Savage, and he was willing to debate anyone if they disagree with that assessment. There was steam coming out of Ric Flair's ears, and several others were fuming on the inside as well. The belief is he dissed Flair because the two are in a major contract negotiation, and he was trying to send a hint to Flair that the company doesn't need him. So there you go. This is something that obviously would play into especially next year.
It's the splintering off, if you like. I think people tend to, or at least people I've spoken to, generally tend to think that Bischoff took this tact later on down the line when they were losing the war again to the WWF, and it was his rationale for sort of defending the fact, yes, we're losing now, but we'll keep the advertising sort of thing. Whereas it's interesting to see that those fault lines were drawn much, much earlier. And as you say, a lot of the remarks he makes there are very much just their foreshadowing of things to come, whether it be for his company, for the WWF, or for his own personal situation with Flair, which would explode in the not-too-distant future.
Absolutely. So we moved to Nitro, October 13th, that night. Various times during the show, they had Raven at ringside with his group, The Flock, which is starting to expand. We've got Saturn and Sick Boy so far, and more will join. The Steiner brothers win the WCW tag team titles, beating Scott Hall and Six. Obviously, like we mentioned, Kevin Nash is out with knee surgery. Roddy Piper demanded the belt to be defended on the previous week. So the Steiners win the belts here. Kevin Nash doesn't lose. DDP versus Kurt Hennig is your main event. And after the match, the NWO destroyed Piper and Page until a million stings. All did run-ins, all had their wigs pulled off, and were destroyed. Finally, one of them turned out to be the real Sting, and he cleaned house, which leads to the great moment that you're going to want to talk about, G, with Buff Bagwell. Your boy, Carl.
This is great. There's going to be a bit of Bagwell love here. Three of them come down in triangle formation and enter the ring, right, and they're knocking out the first two, and then Bagwell goes to punch the final guy and then, like, turns away, but this Sting doesn't fall. In the meantime, Bagwell's turned his back to him and is doing his little freaking skip on the spot and his muscle pose, smiling like a douche, and the whole time he's just thinking, you're gonna fucking eat it any second now. And just Sting just grabs him, death drops him, the crowd goes fucking mental, and Hogan starts doing like a hopscotch in the ring,
yeah,
by the ring ropes, just like an absolute stunned kind of
river dance.
River dance, yeah. And just Sting just fucking clears out. This is one of those great, like, Sting not selling anything and just beating the crap out of everybody.
Yeah. Over on Raw, Shawn Michaels officially announces his group as the Generation X, gives him the name this week. Also, in another great Shawn Michaels related news, Kane destroys Flash Funk, and Shawn Michaels, who was supposed to wrestle him, comes out and hooks the leg and gets the pin, and then does the greatest celebration
for
a victory.
Come on, G, you got to say the celebration was a thing of heuristic
the hands beauty. On the hands on the hips and the stretching back and forth.
If you
will not acknowledge what a great heel Shawn Michaels was in this quarter. Compare the two celebrations with Triple H's fake celebration of a victory later on in the night, which absolutely sucks because he's got no charisma and he's just... And by the way, have you noticed how his voice is a lot higher pitched before he's on the...
The way protein shakes.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah, the protein. Yeah, very interesting.
Very curious, that. Also on this year, we get the second Jim Cornette rant, this one on Phil Mushnick, who had the audacity to mention that the exploitation of Brian Pillman's death might have been in bad taste. Cornette gets very angry and gets a fantastic promo, actually, Mushnick.
Yeah, I mean, if the first one you said, Carl, was like corny with freedom, this one seemed like direct from Vince to me.
Yeah.
I think you say Vince does chime in immediately after...
Cornette's promo. Before they cut to corny, Jim Ross goes, what do you think of Mushnick, and yes, I think he's a sorry son of a bitch or something like that.
He just throws out there on commentary,
send your hate mail to this address.
It's the promo Vince wants to cut, but I always felt even with that being the case, there was enough of a personal sense there from Cornette, and that's what he thinks of Phil Mushnick as well.
Yeah, I'd love the line, go to hell Phil Mushnick and try and reform things down there because we're just fine up here without you. The show is actually built around the LOD retiring if they didn't win the tag titles from the Godwins in the main event. So we've got highlights of LOD throughout the show, interviews about them. LOD even had the audacity to rip on Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, saying they weren't like those two guys resting on their reputations from the past who have nothing left. And at the end of the show, the LOD does win the tag titles.
Yeah, the promise was, if they're not going to rest on the laurels, if they can't go anymore against the younger guys, then they'll hang it up.
So let's just see how they do compare to Hogan and Savage in the ratings. Nitro does a 3.8, Raw does a 2.3.
Yeah, I was about to ask, I was curious with the ratings, because they hadn't been treated or protected, let's say, brilliantly since they returned to the company just before WrestleMania that year. Tease of the retirement angle comes from absolutely nowhere. It's not promoted in the weeks leading up.
No,
it's not even promoted the week before. It's something that just, you don't know
the show with
until
it,
you
they?
Open the show and find
I said they always seemed over to the live audience, though.
Oh, yeah, they've got great live reactions, don't get me wrong. Yokozuna, who is said to be down to 500 pounds, starts back on the road with the WWF in November. The preliminary plan is for him to be a heel, and he may work a program with Vader.
So practically spelt there.
Yeah, well, we'll get to Yokozuna in due course here. In a counter-programming move, the USA Network and the WWF have scheduled a Survivor Series flashback show on October the 28th, airing opposite the TNT-produced Escape from Devil's Island, a movie starring Hulk Hogan. The flashback show is being heavily pushed as the night of 100 stars, including Hogan, Savage, Flair, Hennig, Diesel and Razor, and will be headlined by the match from the 91 Survivor Series where Undertaker pinned Hogan to win the title. We move to Nitro on October the 20th. The show opened with them showing Scott Norton, Conan, Vincent and Kurt Hennig laid out on the concrete with Hogan, Savage and Bischoff screaming about this and what they're going to do. So obviously it's a war of attrition here between both sides. They strongly hinted that Piper, Page and Sting had done it. Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero had a fantastic match on this show. Very underrated, lovely, hidden gem of a match. Eddie wins pretty much clean with a frog splash too, but great stuff. The look in his eyes as he walks down the aisle. This is classic. Eddie looks so fucking good during this period too.
I'd actually put it as one of the better ones I've seen those two have.
Very good TV match. Bill Goldberg, who got a noticeable pop, tackled and suplexed Wrath for the pin in only 20 seconds. Don't think for a second that WCW isn't deliberately doing an in-your-face gimmick in they're taking somebody with no name and creating their own Ken Shamrock, and WWF had the real thing and turned him to just another pro wrestler. So interesting, that was kind of the motivation behind Goldberg in the early days.
I'm curious to see if it pays off.
Eric Bischoff went crazy on Vince McMahon in a promo saying how he and the USA Network were afraid of the Escape from Devil's Island movie.
This is when
Bischoff has the signs with him in the ring where he's saying, please don't take this to the competition show. Yeah. That would be terrible.
The fly or whatever. It looks ridiculous anyway because Hogan's got like a fucking wig on, isn't it? He's got like...
That's great though.
It looks fucking awful, man.
It's great.
They show you a clip
the film. It's amazing.
It's atrocious.
It's awesome.
It's got Carl Weathers in who's great, but like, I mean, no, come on.
Over on Raw, they did an angle where the Nation of Domination's locker room was trashed and tried to heavily play the race angle, acting like the Hart Foundation did it. This is a pretty disgusting angle.
Those goddamn racist Canadians.
Yeah, the Canadian flags all over the place. KFC with a line through it is there. It's horrible. It's fucking horrible.
You know, the Melanie Pillman stuff was sleazy. You know, we're continuing on that path.
This
with
is just downright
the
offensive.
Racial overtones.
I was just kind of like watching that segment, just going like, where the fuck are they going with this? So you got one heel group trying to frame another heel group for trashing another heel group's locker. Who's the babyface in the company? And I know it's like Austin, but like
Austin's like asking for an Intercontinental title match. Like, he's like in the mid card, and you just got like this running in like the main area of the show, where you got Brent Shawn, which is obviously like a good angle because of the actual real life heat that's going on between them. But you just
is it a good angle though? Is it really?
Well, that's what I'm getting, because I'm just saying, like, where's the company going with all this? Because it just seems like heels. At least with WCW, whilst they're making mistakes and there's some lame stuff in there, at least they generally have like a direction. They know they're going with Sting Hogan. But here on Raw, I'm just watching this angle going like, what's the intention of this? I don't get where they're going.
There's not a destination in mind really with this.
Other than Survivor Series.
Other than Survivor Series.
Which we know is Bret and Shawn.
But and gang rules, I guess.
But they've just generally got this stance of this desire to create more sort of more edgy, if you like, hence the racial overtones, more realistic in their mind, television.
I thought the position of Brett had changed at this point.
Oh, yeah, half-assed babyface all the way here.
He's proxy to Shawn being the ultimate dick. He's, you know, the Honourable Brett. The Canada stuff's toned down a lot, so yeah, it's not really... So I think Brett is definitely the CEO babyface. Yeah. So
Jeff Jarrett came out and did a so-called shoot interview, saying he's refused Eric Bischoff's offer. The live crowd had absolutely no idea what he was talking about, and this got no reaction, says Dave Meltzer. He said Bischoff held him back out of ignorance and inexperience, but then ripped on McMahon for the country music gimmick, and then challenged Bret, Shawn, and Steve Austin. Jeff Jarrett wearing his fantastic maths teacher jacket.
I was gonna say, Jeff Jarrett and ideas above his station. I've heard that somewhere before.
Well, I love Jeff Jarrett. Did a great interview. The Undertaker did an interview saying he would never wrestle Kane. The idea, obviously, at this point is already to hold the match up until WrestleMania. Kane lays out Dude Love on this show and didn't sell a thing, including a chair shot to the head. Chuck slams Dude twice on the steel ramp.
This isn't Undertaker in the ring, the clouds and the blue lighting and all that sort of thing. It's him sat down, dressed about as plainly as you're ever going to see the Undertaker dressed prior to the American Badass gimmick, cutting what is, for him, a quite emotional promo, an attempt to humanise him as well.
Billy Gunn as a badass Billy Gunn and the Road Dogg Jesse James form a tag team and beat the Headbangers. Nitro, against this, drew its largest audience ever for an opposed show, doing a 4.5. Raw, however, did a healthy 3.0, so back up from the LOD show last week. Combined ratings broke the previous best, so again, growth in the wrestling industry overall on Monday nights. October 21st, we move on to the first Bret Hart story here. McMahon approaches Bret with the idea of losing the title to Shawn Michaels at Survivor Series, but promised that he would win it back at the December pay-per-view. Hart, remembering his conversations where Michaels was adamant about not doing any more jobs, was reluctant, saying after the way the angle had been done and becoming a big patriotic deal, he didn't want to lose the title in Canada. So that's October 21st. At this point, again, keep in mind, folks, Bret isn't going anywhere yet. The Patriot. Del Wilkes, Kieran's favourite wrestler, suffered a torn tricep upon impact, delivering a shoulder block to Jim Neidhart. Patriot's doctor recommended he retire because his tricep tears appear to be a chronic problem. Hmm. And this is pretty much the end for the Patriot.
Tricep tears?
I can't possibly imagine, though. You know, just add it to that list of chronic problems he has, which include lack of personality, lack of general wrestling talent.
Hey, at least it frees up his music for someone else down the line, though.
WCW in 1998 will be getting an $8 million increase in its budget slated for talent. It's noted here, so what could possibly go wrong with giving these guys more money, I suppose? Rey Mysterio Jr. is said to be very unhappy about losing his mask at Halloween Havoc. Although that is the plan the last we've heard, it may be something that could change as late as the last minute. Expect Disco Inferno to use the Stone Cold Stunner as his new finisher, which would be retaliation for the belief that the WWF had Mark Mero use the Diamond Cutter as his new finisher. So it's really getting personal. Ooh. Now really getting heated in this wrestling war,
because when lawsuits aren't enough, when you've called Jerry McDivitt as many times as you possibly can.
We move to October 24th. McMahon told Bret Hart on the phone that the money situation in the company had changed and they would no longer have any problems paying him everything promised in his contract. Hart told McMahon that WCW really hadn't made him a serious offer and that he really didn't want to leave, and left the phone call with the idea he was staying with the WWF. At the time, McMahon offered Hart the huge contract last year in 1996. The company was losing about $135,000 per week. But due to the price increase of the In Your House series, which over the course of a full year would add about $5 to $6 million to company revenue, that huge weekly deficit will be wiped out, which means they can afford Bret's deal.
Oh, that's all right then.
Yeah.
It's all going
to
be
smooth. How do you read this? Because this coming a couple of days after him asking Bret to lose the belt.
Working him to drop the belt.
That's how I read it.
I can't see it any other way. There's such an about face turn from Vince. You know,
there's plenty of them, and we're going to get to them. But there's plenty of them. It's so confusing to try and read.
We'll certainly go through them, but you can only assume from what's gone, what's transpired prior to that, that it's just trying to butter Bret up.
Eric Bischoff personally called Rey Mysterio Jr. up and told him if he didn't lose at Havoc, he'd consider it a contract breach and he'd be fired, and even threatened him with a lawsuit. The general belief is that Steve Austin won't be back in time for Survivor Series after being given the bad news last week that he should rest for another 2 months and then get an evaluation at that time to determine whether he should even return at all. So at this point, Steve Austin's still obviously feeling the ramifications of the SummerSlam neck injury, and we would see this, not to skip ahead too much, even after Survivor Series, which is a very short match in and of itself, the attempted use of Austin in matches that never turn out to actually happen is quite apparent for the next, really, 3 or 4 months.
And aside, just because that's drop on memory, the amount of non-finishes we're getting on Raw at this point is ridiculous.
Amplified tenfold, yeah. The New York Post received more than 1,000 hate letters and emails this past week stemming from the Cornette commentary on Raw, and TV Guide received a great deal more than that. Unfortunately, the image of wrestling fans took a bigger hit because the responses were more along the lines of, suck my dick and blow me. Amazing. We move to that Sunday, Halloween Havoc, October 26th. 12,457 fans sell out the building. A 1.1 buy rate for 300,000 buys, a company record on pay-per-view here at Halloween Havoc. The first three matches, largely with wrestlers who learned their trade in other countries and announced by Mike Tenay, were the beginnings of an excellent show, says Dave Meltzer. Starting with match 4, it was among the worst pay-per-view shows in years, with only the Savage vs. DDP matches a saving grace. Rey Mysterio Jr. does win and retains his mask in a fantastic match, in a finish that wasn't finalised until the minutes before the show started.
If I'm not mistaken, Meltzer gives it the coveted 5-star rating as well. Right,
and rightfully so. To say that these two were in sync and in tune with each other during this match is kind of underestimating it. It's just like, this is absolutely phenomenal. Rey and Eddie work a superb match where the psychology's all there, the pacing's all right, but they still leave room for those big moments.
You mean they sell?
Yeah, they sell, and still leave those big moments, like the Rey jumping onto the top rope and then flipping backwards into the DDT.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could probably try that again like 100 times again, you wouldn't hit it as perfect as you did on that night. It was just, everything just fell into place.
When that match was finished, what did they cut to immediately afterwards? While this is all going on, they cut to Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan backstage doing a promo.
Oh, God,
it's like, don't let this sink in or anything like that. Let's just move on to
don't digest this. We've got a great main event to get to, which happened to be what?
Hogan and Piper in a cage, which was the absolute shits. It was a horrible match. So yeah, this was just a pile of shit. One thing I want to note, by the way, is Randy Savage. This cage is huge. This is an enormous cage, and Randy Savage is standing on top of this cage to do an axe handle from the top. Fucking hell, how his knees didn't just fall apart forever after this is beyond me, because the cage appears to be made of rubber and like just bends as he tries to jump, and he barely even gets Hogan, who's his intended target, and he just crumples. It's like, fuck's sake. In an era where fan behaviour at wrestling has led to problems, WCW has decided to encourage the problem. After the match was over, a planted fan with Sting makeup hopped the barricade in an incredibly lame attempt at a shooter angle and ended up being attacked by Savage and Hogan, with Hogan throwing his work punches that weren't even hitting the guy. Security just stood there and did nothing to close the show.
So that's what that was.
Okay. Yeah. I was watching that trying to like think, like, is this like genuine? Because
no.
like what's going on? This isn't the only time that it's seen that a member of the crowd jumps the barrier.
It more on this later.
It actually happens quite often, so I don't know who's in charge of fucking security down there. Maybe it's
Doug Dillinger.
It's Doug Dillinger. Not
Ralphus.
Ralphus, that's it, Ralphus.
Moving along to the next night on Raw, the Nation of Domination comes out claiming the WWF is racist and challenged the Hart Foundation to a match. Michaels then stirred everyone up and called Bret Hart the Grand Wizard and claimed that the Hart Foundation used the N-word, which of course the Nation full-heartedly believes and goes chasing after the Hart Foundation.
Attacked him on the ramp.
Like complete idiots. DX is an interview where Shawn Michaels pulls down his pants while trying to play hold signs over his ass. So that's good stuff. Owen Hart suffers a severe concussion in his match with Ahmed Johnson on an axe kick. There's tremendous heat on Ahmed for both that and because the previous night he got into a fight with D'Lo Brown.
Ahmed rocking his massive knee brace, looking like his half robot at this point as well.
Jim Cornette's rant this week is on the Icons of Wrestling, which is the Hulk Hogan. Yeah, our household word, but so is garbage, and that's things when it gets old too.
Yeah, he loved the cage match about as much as we did.
Yeah. Over on Nitro, the show opens with Hogan and Bischoff challenging anyone in the house to a match, which DDP accepts, and of course, plugging the movie. Raven did another interview, this time from a playground, which I actually really like the series of Raven promos. It is one next to a crib, I think the previous week, and this one on the playground, which is talking about how every single memory he ever has hurts, so what do you do? And then he takes out Riggs' eye in an ODQ match right after this. So that's a development for Raven. His flock grows. Raven's looking good here during this whole phase.
During this whole time where everyone was worried about the NWO,
Raven's building his army in the undercard, and these are guys, this is different to the NWO, where this isn't all about egos. All of these guys are trying to like try and put their face in front of the camera, in front of everyone else.
The rest of them are jobbers.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. They're all a bunch of jobbers who are there to risk their lives and like put their bodies online for Raven. Yeah. And that's like a different type of evil. That's a lot more like interesting, which is basically what they should be doing with Riot. And I just thought, like, man, that's an angle that they could have really gone and like ran the ball with. They never did, really.
Well, they didn't run as a top thing, but Raven got some good mileage for the next like 6-8 months at least. Mm. Raven got a decent shove here. Mm. Diamond Dallas Page beats Hulk Hogan in the main event when a fake Sting runs in for the DQ. Hogan then KO'd Page with a title belt, and the NWO all joined in, destroying Page until the real Sting ran down. Sting first used the death drop on Vincent, allowing Tony Schiavone to deliver his planned phrase, "Vince goes down again." And Sting cleans house on everybody one by one except Hulk Hogan. The rest of the show is a backdrop for the announcers going on and on to the point of way past overkill about the live press conference that will take place during the Hogan movie the next night to announce the signing of Hogan and Sting for Starrcade. So they're going to run an angle during Escape from Devil's Island to go against the Survivor Series flashback show.
Corporate synergy, people.
It's like no holds barred again.
Pretty much, actually.
Oh, come on.
Remarkable. Nitro does a 4.3 to Raw's 2.3 this week. So pretty strong showing from Nitro here as they pick up pace.
But the only thing I would say there is, as bad as a number as that is for Raw, but you've got Nitro breaking four again. I don't believe it's the first time they've done that.
No.
But again, it shows sort of the positive health, or at least the interest, if you like, in the business as a whole.
Combined 6.6.
Exactly, yeah. The combined 6.6. You look at that and you think, God, you couldn't imagine that now.
Yokozuna won't be returning after all.
Oh, he found a buffet somewhere.
he underwent tests to get a license in New York and failed the physical due to obesity and an irregular heartbeat. He was said to still weigh in excess of 600 pounds. Because commissions honour other commission stipulations, that means he will be unable to wrestle in 20 to 22 states. So that is pretty much it for the apparently svelte, but not really, Yokozuna.
Has he piled on 100 pounds in a week? Or was he just lying?
This is what happens when you give him the bucket of fried chicken and don't have the Diet Coke there.
Great reference.
It must have been the old Homer thing when he got his stomach on the railing and, oh shit, I'm still 600.
Yoko, towel rack.
Did they say you have to go through tests before they realise he was obese? The fact that you just walk through the door, 500 pounds, isn't enough for them to think, you're a fat fuck.
Maybe it's an optical illusion.
Get him on the treadmill, we'll find out how fat he is.
Maybe Scott Steiner was head of the commission at that point.
We move to October 28th. It is the war that we've all been talking about. Escape from Devil's Island versus the Survivor Series flashback. Escape from Devil's Island is a 4.2 in its premiere, making it among the most watched made-for-cable movies ever. So Hogan's internal power is stronger than ever before.
No, it's not. It's Carl Weathers.
But the Survivor Series flashback is a 2.8. So WCW with it again, that the Sting Hogan contract signing played a big part in it, but it wins the night here. So another pat on the back for Eric Bischoff internally, I'm sure. October 31st, however, a very important date. Just one day before Bret Hart had to either give notice or stay for another year, Eric Bischoff made a huge concrete offer. Hart neither agreed nor turned down the deal, but gave the impression to WCW they had a great shot at getting him.
Yeah. This is where
the worm turns.
The shit hits the fan.
It does, and it picks up now. November 1st, Judgment Day. Hart had until midnight to make up his mind. He called McMahon, told him about the WCW offer, and said he wasn't asking for any more money to stay, but that he wanted to know what his future plans were. McMahon said he'd call him back. McMahon ended up calling back 4 hours later from his barbershop in Manhattan and told Hart that he didn't know what he was going to do with him, but trust him. McMahon brought up the scenario of wanting Hart to drop the title in Montreal again, but promised he would get it back in December.
But the fact that, like, Bret's always claimed that in his contract he had a certain amount of dates that he had to fulfil, and he'd already fulfilled it and more.
Yeah.
And so he didn't need to even turn up at Survivor Series. He could have just put the bell on the table and said, "See you, Vince, I'm gone."
Well, he's not even leaving at this point, keep in mind.
Well, yeah, okay. But when he eventually does decide to leave, he could have done whatever he wants because he already more than fulfilled his contracted dates. And it just seems like Vince knows this. And he's like, he's doing whatever he can to try and get that belt off him, which is why, hence why he keeps going back to this, can you lose the belt in Montreal? Don't worry, you'll get it back down the line.
In one month.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
I don't think at any point, I think quite clearly right now, Vince has got no intentions of keeping Bret. He doesn't want to keep Bret.
This is all just to keep Bret on side. And yes, I know we don't know what would have happened, but I think we can take an educated guess and say, The notion is, get the belt off Brett. I'm not then losing my champion to the rival company. And, oh, by the way, yeah, Brett, it turns out we don't have the money to honour your contract now. You're now free to go and negotiate again with WCW.
Yeah, it's a weird deal.
This whole, as well, the dynamic of the company, I think maybe it's this next week when Brett doesn't appear on Raw.
It's the go-home show.
Yeah, it's the go-home show. He's not there. The excuse they give was because he was upset with the Sean showing his ass.
Yeah.
Brett, at this point, really does feel, and in the way he's being projected by within the company, but he's a fish out of water. He's kind of a guy from a different time.
They had him as a babyface, they turned him heel, and they've already moved past him.
Yeah.
You can see it in Brett's face as he's doing these back and forth promos for Shawn Michaels. I'm thinking, I think we've probably already passed it, my mistake. I just see the look on Brett's face. It's the same face that he's kind of pulled all the way through this time period, where Brett's just kind of like,
fuck this.
Fuck this. He's like, what are we doing? He's like, what am I doing? What am I doing talking to this prick? What are we doing in this company? Where's wrestling going? And like, and at times, like when watching this angle, I just see like Sean just going through his spiel. I'm just kind of like sat there looking at Brett, just kind of like, man, I can see he looks older. Like the longer this goes and the more he's staying in WWF, and it doesn't get any easier when he gets to WCW, he's just looking more and more older and out of touch, and just like the old dad who's just kind of like, ah, music's not what it used to be. And it's like this, and I just feel like so sorry for Brett in this case, and it's just like, it's just getting worse and worse. It's just like, you can see already, it's not going to end well.
At 7 p.m. that night, Eric Bischoff called once again and presented a deal that, according to Bret Hart, would have been insane not to be taken. So again, they're still going back and forth here. At 9 p.m, Vince McMahon calls back and, reversing Fields once again, urged him to take the WCW offer. Brett told him that his heart was with the WWF and it would break his heart to leave. McMahon then presented the following scenario to keep Brett. He wanted Shawn Michaels to win in Montreal. In December, they do a fatal four-way match with Brett, Shawn, Taker and Shamrock that Michaels would win. At the Rumble, Brett and Shawn would have a ladder match, which Michaels would win. On Raw the next night, Hart would open the show and say that if he couldn't beat Michaels and win the title that night, he would retire from wrestling, and in that match, he would regain the title, and then he'd drop it to Austin at WrestleMania. Bret Hart, upon hearing that, gave notice to the WWF and officially agreed to terms for a deal with WCW. So if you can't get the message of Vince clearly pushing him out the door, that story should tell you everything you need to know.
It's amazing.
The deal is done, Brett is going.
Yeah, it's amazing how that changed from, you know, you'll get the title back in December to... you get the title back on Raw after Rumble, and then you lose it 2 months later to the real guy.
When Hart arrives in WCW, says Meltzer, he'll immediately be inserted into the top of the mix and used to get the new Thursday show over, as well as help the company's presence in Canada, where he's the country's most popular wrestler. Nitro just began airing weekly on TSN in Canada, and TBS just became a regular as opposed to a premium cable station throughout the country, giving WCW tremendously improved exposure in a country they've never really done a lot of business in historically.
Can't fail.
I can't wait to see them capitalise on that.
Exactly what is going to happen in Montreal is unclear. With Hart leaving, everyone will expect him to lose to Michaels for logical, common sense business reasons. With wrestling the way it is today, the title switch shouldn't be taken as a lock, although obviously he will be dropping the title at some point very quickly. So that's the read on it before Survivor Series from Big Dave. The deal has been made with WCW. The next day, November the 2nd, Hart and Vince McMahon are back on the phone, and Hart again refused to do the job in Montreal. Now, of course, now that he's leaving, the 30 days of reasonable creative control is in effect. So Brett has the right to veto the loss in Montreal, saying that he'd never refused to do a job, but he wasn't going to lose on Sunday or Monday while they're in Canada. McMahon then made legal threats to Hart if he wouldn't lose in Montreal. Hart talked about the clause in his contract giving him reasonable creative control, but Vince claimed that refusing to drop the title wasn't reasonable. The two argued about the finish in Montreal well into the night before finally agreeing to do a DQ finish, and then in the final four match at the December pay-per-view, Michaels would win the belt there and Brett can do a farewell speech the next night. Technically, there is a problem with this scenario in that his WCW contract begins on December 1st, so Bret Hart called Eric Bischoff, who allowed him to work to that date. So despite no obligation, Eric Bischoff allowed Brett the, pseudo-contract extension to stick around till December 7th to drop the belt.
He's a jam-up guy, that Bischoff.
November 3rd on Raw, the final Raw, again, as you mentioned, Kieran, there is no Bret Hart on this show. Not to be outdone, WWF did its own fan-out-of-the-audience angle, in this case allowing the fan, Steve Blackman, to wind up being the fourth member of Team USA replacing the Patriot. So this is the debut of the Lethal Weapon. Kane destroys Ahmed Johnson this week.
which is a stark contrast to Ahmed Johnson destroying himself.
The Ahmed as well, the Kane attack, this is another tease Steve Austin match. Against Ahmed, and so they got out with Kane's music hitting.
Goldust turns heel on Marlena on this week's Raw as well. This is the kind of allusion to I know what you were doing with Pillman with that whole 30 days. So Goldust turns heel on Marlena here. Only the thing of note is the DX room with the fans once again chant Sean is gay, so he kisses Triple H on the lips in response. But this is the angle
does
where
he?
Yeah, he pulls me and kisses him on the lips and shakes his head and
subliminally block that out.
Sean doesn't kiss mid-carders.
This is also the week where they put the windshield wiper masks on while Slaughter's talking to him after Sean had been getting nailed with spit for weeks on end from Slaughter. So pretty funny stuff here. Over on Nitro, Eric Bischoff did an interview saying the entire NWO, including Hogan and Nash, would be at Nitro next week and that he'd have a surprise announcement, which of course was intended to be Bret Hart. The final part of Mike Tenay's documentary on Lucha Libre is on this week. They actually did a series of these over the course of 4 weeks. Mike Tenay and the Lucha Libre and the Mexican Luchadors, just to kind of give a bit of a context of the history and tradition of Lucha Libre. So after the final part of Mike Tenay's documentary on Lucha, they did a Lucha Libre battle royal for a few minutes until the Giant came out and destroyed everyone.
Oh god,
there's your Luchadors, ladies and gentlemen. Don't care about these too much.
Where's that Prices Right tune?
Yeah, exactly. The main event is Kurt Hennig versus Lex Luger with a DQ run-in from Ric Flair. So nothing too much different there.
Schmozzes as far as the eye can see in both companies.
Nitro does a 3.9 to Raw's 2.6. So Raw still kind of fighting for a little bit of something here. Nitro staying fairly stable. November the 4th, after the go-home show, McMahon calls Brett and said he's changed his mind, suggesting now that Shawn Michaels should lose clean in Montreal to build to the December show. He said he was going to call Shawn Michaels and present the scenario to him. Bret Hart leaving the company hits the hotlines and the internet on the Tuesday, so the news is starting to get out. The next day, November 5th, Vince calls Bret back and says that Shawn Michaels has agreed to the scenario, but that now Vince himself had changed his own mind. He said the news was out everywhere and that Bret had to drop the belt before Monday because he couldn't have Bischoff go on television next week and announce the signing of his world champion. Bret said that he would get Bischoff to postpone the announcement, but with Bischoff on a hunting trip, Hart couldn't get hold of him. McMahon then asked Hart to drop the belt on the Saturday house show in Detroit, and Bret turned it down. Feeling that the way that everything had been built up, he wanted the match with Michaels on pay-per-view for the belt.
Boys are toys.
Fuck you, Bret. I won't lose in Canada, but he's not going to lose in Detroit either.
Well, his point, I guess, is that they've advertised the match with the pay-per-view for the belt.
Oh, yeah,
so
he didn't even turn up for the go-home show for us. Fuck you, liar. Poor old Sean.
Oh, come off it. Come off it, sunshine. Bret offered to lose the belt as soon as they were back out of Canada anywhere he wanted. By this point, the Calgary Sun, the Toronto Sun, and the Montreal Gazette were all reporting that Bret Hart was leaving the company. So, yeah, this, by the way, October 5th, that phone call with Michaels is the famous Triple H is listening in and says, fuck him.
Though, having said that, what money would you have had on Vince having that conversation with Bret saying, yes, I now want you to win clean at Survivor Series, and then Vince just managing to leak it himself somehow? You know, my heart was in the right place, Bret. I wanted to do things your way.
And I'm going to tell Sean that this is the plan.
But, events outside of my control.
The results of an MRI on Six's neck came back and they were pretty bad, and he had more damage than originally thought, and he will be out of action for a while. For those of you who do not know, this will be the end of Six Wrestling in WCW.
Poor stack of dimes.
That poor stack of dimes neck. November 7th, 2 days before Survivor Series, Bret Hart appears on Off the Record. Despite the word being out everywhere by this point, Hart would only go so far as to say he had given his 30-day notice to the WWF that he's reviewing offers from both groups and is leaning strongly towards going one way. Bret was very critical of the new direction of the WWF, bringing up both the sexual and racial angles and the exploitation of Brian Pillman's death the next day for ratings, saying he wouldn't let his kids watch the TV show anymore.
In many respects, that interview with Landsberg speaks to your earlier point, Kieran, about how it's all just passed him by now. In many respects, the business as a whole is passing Bret by, and it's whilst you're right, G, when you say sort of when he's on TV, he's looking maybe a bit more jaded, a bit more older. His heart's not really in it, but the Landsberg interview clearly shows that he's not really going away quietly. He's let's say he's not going out with the intention of burning bridges completely, but he's not going to be any shrinking violet either. And these remarks from Bret would go beyond Landsberg showing into his own column, and I think, unfortunately, I forget which publication is
Calgary Sun.
The Calgary Sun, where he would, I believe he'd elaborate on these thoughts on several occasions as well.
That same night, November the 7th, 2 days before Survivor Series, at a Toronto house show, Bret Hart was asked to do a job in the six-man tag to Steve Austin's Stunner, but he refused, saying that since it was in Canada and he was the only Canadian in the main event, he felt it was the wrong thing for the show.
Selfish.
It it is selfish, but, and I say this as a big Steve Austin fan, I can understand the rationale.
You know, it is just two stubborn people like butting heads. But it's like, how many more times does Brett have to tell Vince he doesn't want to lose in Canada? it's like how many more times does he have to tell Vince just turns around and goes, okay, I get it. Okay, you don't want to lose in Canada.
The thing is, G, Vince knows all this. Let's not do Vince a disservice and suggest he's the village idiot here. This is all, to me, just a part of Vince's
fucking with him.
but basically that, but it's his way of sort of presenting the case, if you like, to everyone else who isn't Bret Hart, of, you know, it's that way of portraying Bret as unreasonable as he possibly can.
Yeah, and in defense of Bret here as well, the whole reason he put that clause in was so that he thought that in the last 30 days they couldn't do damage to him. Mm. And he got that massive deal with WCW, probably largely on the idea that he's going to give him the keys to Canada, and there's going to be a whole huge revenue stream because Bret Hart's so strong there. So he's probably thinking that he is protecting his own best interests going forward for the deal he's just signed. So this, to him, is being buried on the way out and hurting his value. Considering how much they protect other top guys in this company, I don't think that this is that unreasonable. November 9th, the WWF Survivor Series. 20,593 fans sell out the building. A 0.89 for 250,000 buys, the best buy rate the WWF does all year. Of course, the day of the show, the plans change yet again. There's the famous meeting on Wrestling with Shadows that Brett wore wiring that everybody knows about, where Brett proposed the idea of getting out this match with the DQ, and then he just presents the belt to him the next night because everybody knows he's already leaving. Vince, in a roundabout way, just pretty much says, everybody knows anyway, so I don't see any harm in that. Sure, Brett, let's do it your way. And then, of course, we know what happens.
I don't think there's really much we can add to it. As we've talked about it in other podcasts. We talked about it recently on our Survivor Series look back about our thoughts whilst we were watching. I think it's probably best just to get straight to the fallout.
As soon as the show's finished, Vincent Mann locks himself in his office. Undertaker, who's furious, bangs on the door and orders Vince McMahon to come out and says that he needs to go to Bret Hart and apologise immediately. So of course he does so. Bret Hart tells him to fuck off, and then when he doesn't, he knocks him out with one punch, and that's the end of Vince's night as he limps out the room for the cameras to capture it for the world.
And Earl Hebner is seen somewhere near the Canadian border.
Earl Hebner fucks off. Although it's actually in the Observer that Earl Hebner at the hotel, they did a fake scene with him and Lanza where Hebner claimed that he wasn't in on it and how disgusted he was and how he's going to quit the company and da da da, in front of all the wrestlers, of course, to try and exonerate Earl, until of course everyone just watches the tape and realises that he's the one that rang the bell. So a little bit of chicanery going on here. It's just disgusting.
From one perspective, when reading Bret Hart's book on it, so I always like how Bret describes how the situation goes down when he's describing it almost like it's fucking Goodfellas. And it's just like everyone enters in, he's just like, Vince McMahon enters in with his son, and I think like Patterson and Briscoe, and his posse, he's got his posse with him, right, because he thinks something's going to go down, he thinks they're the best people to take with him, and it's interesting, but like Brett's there, and he's obviously got like the Hart Foundation with him, and the thing that I love most when Brett's describing the situation is, I fucking love him, Rick Rude is right in the middle of it there, and they do something where I think it might be Shane says like can we all just like everybody leave so Vince and Brett can talk, and Rude's just absolutely adamant, and he's saying, I ain't fucking going anywhere, because Rude's fucking hard, right, because Rude's generally hard, and he's just like
harder than a coffin nail.
Yeah, I just fucking love that, just reading that, just like Rude's not going anywhere, he's got Brett's back, and I fucking love Rude. It's like,
great. Thought Vince was gonna murk Brett.
Yeah, it's the thing, just like, he's not gonna leave, he's going, no, we're gonna stay right where we are.
Yeah, what, you know, I like to have right now. Owen Hart, Davey Boy Smith and Mick Foley were so upset they all flew home. Davey's lawyer sent the WF a fax that Davey had aggravated his knee injury pulling apart Brett and Vince. I've heard it all now. The next night, of course, the fallout. Monday Night Raw, backstage, Vince McMahon gives his side of the story. He portrayed it as if Bret Hart had agreed to drop the belt in Montreal, but when he got to the building, he said he was a Canadian hero and icon and refused to drop the belt, and said that Hart said he would give the belt to McMahon on Raw the next night and refused to ever drop it. Reports were, by this time, that few, if anyone, in the dressing room believed a word of it. McMahon then claimed that he took the punch for all the boys.
Because he owed Brett that.
So this is the first Raw as well, when they run the WWF Attitude video thing.
Yeah. You
Yeah, it is.
Brett's in that video, isn't he? The first one.
Yeah, he's in the first one.
This episode of Raw is an absolute clusterfuck. We'll get to it now. The Shamrock Helmsley main event heat was non-existent, drowned out by chance of We Want Brett. Brett's mentioned in a pre-taped Jeff Jarrett promo because they obviously recorded it before Survivor Series. Yeah. They air it and he's talking about Brett. As you mentioned there, there's the Attitude video with Brett.
Is this a show where, like, Sean comes out with both belts and he's doing his thing? And then Ken Shamrock comes out.
This horrible promo.
Oh, fuck, no. This is horrible from all accounts. We're seeing someone, and I'm actually kind of glad for Shamrock to come out and cut a promo.
Well, you wouldn't be for long.
Well, I know. As he's, like, trying to talk, which is struggling, you know, like, Sean is just, like, not selling. He's acting like a buffoon. Like, Sergeant Slaughter comes out, and he's, like, trying to protect his face and all that. And it's this entire segment just fucking drowns. It drowns under the fact that Ken Shamrock can't talk, and it's drowning under the fact that Shawn Michaels is burying the entire segment.
Yeah, but you know what? At least Shawn, while he's doing his goofy act, is hiding behind everybody else doing it. What's more offensive to me is Triple H trying to act like the tough guy. Like he's no selling Shamrock going forward.
Trying to act like Arn Anderson.
And he bows up to Ken. It's like, fuck you. He would tie your arsehole in a knot in seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because that's the thing, because he's saying, like, oh, you know, China could kick your ass, Triple H could kick your ass. I just thought it was funny, it was just Ken Shamrock's just like, you know, he's just running them down as best he can. He just turns around and just says, I don't know what the fuck you are.
China.
He does it several times. Yeah. I just kind of think, oh, it's like, it's a bit bad. She is a woman, for Christ's sake, but it's like, it's funny doing it once, but he says it like about five times.
He didn't have much A-list material already.
He didn't know whatever you are.
Yeah, his material was basically calling Rick old man and calling China him.
And yeah, only one got a pop, so let's say it again.
Yeah. Exactly. Also on the show, Mark Merrow and Ahmed Johnson had one of the worst matches in the history of wrestling. Absolutely fucking horrific performance here. From anybody who's seen this, go and watch this match and watch I can only imagine was supposed to be a TKO after the bell, which is just fucking awful.
It's the reason I drink, folks.
They also did an angle with Mark Merrow and Butterbean on this show.
Oh God, yeah, lead into that.
Yeah, that fiasco. Yeah. The Generation X pay-per-view that's coming up next. Over on Nitro, Eric Bischoff opens the show with the entire NWO holding Canadian flags and mockingly singing "O Canada," announcing that Bret Hart had signed with the NWO, and he also calls him a knockout kind of guy.
Yeah, this is Bischoff like in his element here.
Oh, he's just so fucking happy,
douchey, and just like it's just even more funny by the fact that they're all holding sheets. I'm assuming with the lyrics, and it's blatant. You can just hear that only Bischoff's the one singing. Everyone else is just kind of mumbling, and then Bischoff's just singing it loud and proud, and he's like putting the mic in like Henning's face, so he has to fucking sing the words, you know.
Kurt gives it a go.
Yeah, Kurt gives it a good go. Just to mention as well, this is also Nash's return. Nash comes back out. That's the first. He has two major announcements. The first one
comes out in a wheelchair. Comes out in a wheelchair and then runs into the ring.
Yeah. Nash is back.
It's might be the quickest he moved all year, actually.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Ever the comedian.
The two main events on this Nitro, Hennig versus Page and Flair versus Luger, both end in disqualifications.
Schmars everywhere.
But the big angle here is Hogan and the NWO actually lay out Sting. Sting goes to confront Hulk Hogan. Savage plays the distraction. Oh. Hogan lays him out. This is the first time that Sting gets a beating from the NWO, and he's actually not on TV for a little while after this.
Hate this.
Just because they're getting the heat on Sting?
Yeah, hated it.
Why? It's a gang attack. It's not like Hogan's, you know.
Yeah, if it was say Bischoff's distracted and Hogan's just kicked his ass, yeah, okay, fair enough. Why do you want to? You know, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't want to see that. But you've got to get a bit of heat at some point on Sting going to Starrcade, and I think this is the best way to do it without damaging him.
Although, where the fuck was the rest of WCW while this is going on?
Yeah, this is the exact point. There's one show, I can't remember if it's just before this or maybe slightly after, but someone, one of the main babyfaces, I think it might be DDP, is getting beat up in the middle of the ring. And this is like to end the show. And he's getting beat up, and it's just this plain numbers game. And this isn't the first time this happened in this quarter alone. Where's Flair? Where's Larry? Where's Luger?
You were the only person saying, where's Larry?
Because you know, Flair's feuding with Henning, Larry's feuding with Scott Hall, you know, it's like the people who are feuding with the NWO. Where is everybody? Like, there's another week where I think they're beaten down on, I think it might be either Larry or Flair. And again, none of the other guys come out to help. And it's just like, where the fuck is everybody? And like, there's no Sting. And then when Sting does come back, he gets fucking laid out. And it's like, and the most annoying thing is, as we'll get into, it's not the most annoying ending to Nitro.
Yeah, I understand that. But that's generally the way WCW wrestlers, if you want to use that phrase it that way, have been portrayed throughout the entire storyline, by and large. So that's nothing new.
Yeah, and to be fair, I wouldn't run in to save Paige.
Oh. Despite this, Nitro does a 4.3 and Raw, come the day after the Montreal Screwjob, does a 3.4, its strongest rating since the early days of the war. So immediately, whether it's the buzz of what happened, whatever it is, a lot of eyes on Raw, more eyes that have been on Raw for a long, long time in head-to-head competition.
And again, strong numbers all round.
Strong numbers all round.
Maybe there's something there as Vince as a heel.
WCW, in interesting notes here, is considering a round-robin best of the Super Junior style tournament for the Cruiserweights, which is planned to be booked by Dean Malenko. And also, they're going to do a tough man division with the likes of Benoit, Finlay, Goldberg, McMichael, Meng, and others, and creating a championship for it. So there's two things that never happened.
Tough man champion.
Like the hardcore division.
These wrestlers. Oh, okay. I say not
hard
like
man.
Hard man. Yeah. So it's the hardcore.
They're gonna scrap it out for hard man.
Hard bastard championship.
Yeah.
November 13th, Owen Hart met with Vince McMahon in Stamford, Connecticut. Owen wanted some sort of apology and didn't get one. Owen left the meeting and went home and was removed from all house show bookings.
Very much stand up for what you believe, I guess.
I guess so. We moved to November the 17th on Raw, which was actually taped the previous night. Vincent Mann does his sit-down interview with Jim Ross, talking about time-honoured traditions and Brett screwed Brett.
It's fucking shit.
And bear in mind, it is not Vince's intention during this promo to come across as insincere or to come across as a shill in any way. At this point, he is still trying to portray himself desperately as the babyface in all this, while sporting a rather nice shiner.
Yeah, but that's my favourite line. But you know, if he met Brett again, he wouldn't give him a free shot next time.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Fuck.
Yeah, it's just
lest we say it would be different.
You're just looking at this guy, and in fairness, it's obviously this, like, the birth of the McMahon character, because you can see it. Because for the first time, you know, before this, we were looking at a guy we were commenting off air at the time. He was wearing like a black denim jacket with Raw brands all over it, and just looks like, you know, your dad trying to be cool, you know, to just this corporate cunt just sitting there in front of you with, I think it's a bad looking jacket if I remember right.
What a shock.
And he's just kind of like just sat there, and he's giving you corporate answers. Right, not giving you genuine shit, he's giving you corporate answers. It's just that thing of, like, you know, he said, you know, Brett screwed Brett, I have no sympathy for Bret Hart. And he just gives this look of, like, as if he's trying to make it look like butter won't melt in his mouth, but it looks like the shit all over his face. And it's just like, you piece of shit.
Just a really desperate attempt at damage control is what it is. This to me, more than anything that happens in the following weeks, which screams of, oh my god, we did a good rating the day after Survivor Series, let's try and string this out for as long as we can. This one is Vince McMahon trying to get some kind of personal redemption and trying to justify in his own mind and get across to everybody else the way he wants people to see things, because that's the way he sincerely sees it, because he only ever sees his own side of the argument.
Yeah, didn't have a network and the whole industry in the palm of his hand at this point, so his vain attempt to rewrite history turn out to be the best bit of character development he's probably ever done.
So. Yeah, inadvertently so. Also on this show, Steve Austin does an interview challenging Rocky Maivia, but the entire nation comes out, and in the melee, Rocky Maivia steals the Intercontinental Championship. Also, the only other thing I've got on here is that Rick Rude introduces the Generation X. Of course, that was taped on Sunday and airs on Monday. Yeah. On Monday on Nitro Live, November 17th, Rick Rude, who does no longer have the beard but has a great moustache, appears and joins the New World Order. Rick Rude, in the truest of time-honored traditions of the wrestling business, a day or two after debuting with the WWF on August 4th and appearing without signing a contract, immediately called Bischoff up and the two started dialogue. Rude was among the group really upset with how McMahon handled things and was in the room when the fight happened. So yeah, Rick Rude, and it's actually funny because if you go back and listen to our previous timeline at squaredcirclegazette.com, when Rude debuts, Meltzer throws the line in there. Putting him on television without a contract is dangerous in this kind of situation. Like, it's like it's put there, and obviously with the benefit of retrospect, you can read that line and say Meltzer knew that he was negotiating immediately. Yeah.
But it harks back to, you say it was August 4th? I wouldn't say Vince is out of the woods yet when it comes to sort of panicking and throwing things at the wall in terms of trying to draw numbers. But that sort of that summer stint where Vince is really flailing around, and it's To compare it to now, the notion of putting someone on TV without having them locked, shoehorned into that contract with no wiggle room whatsoever, it was just unheard of. So it just speaks to sort of the chaotic nature of the business as a whole at the time, that Vince would be willing to do that.
The main segment of Nitro, the entire NWO jumps Larry Zbyszko, and Bischoff threw a lot of kicks and left him laying. A fan tried to hop the rail, and Bischoff had to sidestep him at the last minute. A second fan later in the show also tried to get involved. So this is the beginnings of what is developing as a pattern stemming from both companies doing angles where fans run in, which were both works, but we're starting to see that that's having negative effects here on the show.
Yeah, so the introducer Rick Rude out on WCW.
And by the way, Eric Bischoff has the biggest fucking smile on his face when Rude's doing his promo. Yeah.
Cathcart's got the cream. And Rude does this promo.
The rights and wrongs.
And it's a really great promo. So he's talking about how, like, you know, how bad Vince is, and he's talking, this is just a guy who's out for himself, who's manipulating match results in order to benefit his own gain. And then he joins a group of people who manipulate match results in order to, you know,
it's a heel, it's a hypocrite. So.
Yeah, I know.
Rick Rude babyface, no one's longing for that.
Yes, I understand the notion of the promo is not necessarily the natural fit for the NWO, but Bischoff didn't have that tight a rein on things, as we've seen. He'd have simply said, right, okay, we're bringing you on board, we're going to put you in the NWO, here's your promo, have a few shots at Vince and bury him.
Yeah,
which they shouldn't have done. All that did was, in the long run, was put Vince's heel character over more. Why bring him in to do that? I don't know, to say you've put over the place you've come into because it's a bigger, better, higher paying place and it's where all the stars are going. Just why even? It's just so stupid and indicative of the times that they use that opportunity just to bury Vince. It's retarded.
To their, again, from their perspective though, they weren't thinking that Vince is going to benefit from this. Everything looks like Vince is going to suffer and that they're going to benefit because Brett's going to them.
But still, what's the point in doing that promo? I mean, in terms of your business...
Put Brett over, I guess. Like, Brett is the rightful champion. He got fucked over, blah, blah, blah.
But I suppose... and it's easy to say in retrospect, but I suppose a sensible way to would have been not to be as sort of blunt, if you like, I suppose, and just talk about how this is the hot company.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, it's rats deserting a sinking ship over there. They can't keep hold of their hottest talent, and a load of other talent want to come along as well.
But instead, because they're in this mindset of name-dropping the opposition, and it's heating up the war, it's great, and they were doing it because they thought it was, you know, it was different, it's the en vogue thing to do. But in terms of running your company, just put yourselves over, you don't need to mention it. It's like the whole Vince...
You're already winning.
Yeah, just put over how, you know, I've come to the major leagues now. It's just
I understand.
It's just in keeping with the pettiness that we've seen throughout.
It is, and this is the show where the locker room does empty for the WCW side because they're setting up World War 3 that Sunday. Nitro is a 4.1 this week to Raw's 3.15, so things are back down for Raw. We do, of course, move to that Sunday, November 23rd, WCW World War 3, 17,128 fans in the building, a 0.56 buy rate for 157,000 buys. Meltzer on this show says it was a poor show from a company with far too much talent to have an excuse for such a card. The original plan when the show was booked was for Lex Luger to win the Battle Royal, but when it was changed to where Luger would be one of the final three, and then apparently Page managed to talk his way into the final three spot and Scott Hall won the match. So this is a rather rank Battle Royal, as they always seem to be, World War III, including the rather cack ending of Kevin Nash dressed as Sting, while the announcers once again believe this is the real Sting and are surprised when Sting, stepping over the top rope, attacks the Giant.
A 7-foot-tall fucking Sting with brown hair.
The next night, we move to Raw, November the 24th. In newspapers around the country, including USA Today, they list the main event on the show as being Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels. They open the show with Michaels doing an interview, claiming he'd had a secret conversation with Bret and that he would be there. Of course, instead of Bret Hart, they dress the Mini in a leather jacket and sunglasses, had Michaels put him in the sharpshooter, Helmsley stick the mic in his face where the Mini said he submitted, put a WCW sign on his butt and told him to go there with the rest of the garbage.
Yes, Shawn so convincing at the start, so solemn and serious at the start of the show.
Yes, as he was backstage at Montreal, in fact.
Yeah, the midget actually had a mask on, which I didn't realise until I watched back, and so you could hardly understand the thing he was saying at the end anyway, which just made a shit angle.
Handsome Harvey is on this show in Vic Rude's place, which is great because he does the intro and Shawn just grabs along and says, well, that was a tough spot to fill. Of course, after the angle we mentioned there with the Mini, Jim Neidhart comes out, gets given the ultimatum of joining DX.
This was a very strange way to make a babyface.
It was indeed. And of course, we get a Vader Shawn Michaels main event where Neidhart helps him win, and then they turn on him at the end and beat the fuck out of him.
There you go.
Also on this show, Billy Gunn and Jesse James win the tag team titles from the Legion of Doom.
So much for hanging with those young guys.
So much for hanging with the new guys. And Luna joins Goldust. So this starts a real shameless period of Goldust's career when he becomes the artist, formerly known as Goldust.
When does he become the artist?
It's the following week when he comes out with the gag.
Ball gag.
The ball gag in his mouth.
Oh, God.
November 24th over on Nitro, the weakest Nitro show in a long time. You get Hogan versus Giant main event, where Giant uses the chokeslam, and of course the entire NWO comes out. Nash was dressed as Sting once again and hit Giant with a bat for the DQ. The exact same scenario seen way too often, and it was actually dull at this point, and the crowd wasn't into it like in the past either. Bischoff and Rick Rude come out and announce that final match as well, and Bischoff teases it's a preview of things to come in the future. And of course the big thing here is while they're beating up the Giant, a Sting dummy, again similar to what happened in the previous quarter, falls from the ceiling and crashes through the ring here. And he's just kind of lying, the Sting dummy's just kind of lying in the middle of the broken ring, and Nash takes the baseball bat and starts playing golf with his head.
it's the Hogan thing again, where like they pick the dummy out and like Hogan's like slapping it.
Nitro does a 3.9 on this week to Raw's 3.05. The WWF has drawn two of its strongest ratings of the year, basically due to the rest of the company has now tried to label as not being worth what they were paying him. Interesting little notes from Meltzer here. Eventually, this reality will turn into a pro wrestling angle if or when Owen Hart returns and goes for revenge against Michaels. It wouldn't even surprise me for McMahon to try and use the negative reaction to do a heel turn himself. And the fact that this caused so much commotion, I'd say it's a lock that companies for years will try copycat scenarios which will all be complete works. So he's 3 for 3 on that one.
Big Dave.
Had they actually even starred it at this point? Because the first real sign of it is Vince and Austin.
Yeah, which is after the next pay-per-view.
Oh, is that okay?
Yeah, it's coming. Even with a Hart signing, at this point, WCW hasn't even made any real effort at booking shows in Canada in 1998.
I'm sure they'll get around to it.
it's in the folder. The announcement of the Eric Bischoff versus Larry Zbysko match at Starrcade with Nitro on the line appears to be the beginning of Bischoff's biggest gamble to date, messing with the winning Monday Night formula. The working idea for 98 is to split WCW and the NWO into somewhat separate entities, each having their own television show and often running separate house shows. The groups would combine on the major arena house shows and pay-per-view events to make those shows have even more of a special aura. Even though things are only a few weeks away, there is shockingly little completed as far as planning goes for the changes that January brings. The planned announced teams are Bischoff, Rude and Tanay on Nitro, and Shivani, Zbysko and Heenan on the Thursday show. So this obviously has been kind of coming for pretty much all year. We mentioned this, I believe, in the first quarter, that TBS wanted this show and that Bischoff was thinking pretty much the brand extension, which is how that reads completely.
And it also, it ties into Bischoff's overall philosophy that we've talked about before, in the sense of, to him, the NWO was never just a faction within the company for storyline purposes. It was always intended to be its own brand.
It is known that behind the scenes, Kevin Nash is trying to get the NWO show to be the Thursday show, as with no wrestling track record to judge it against, anything can be said to be a success. Even if the new show were to bomb on Thursday and do about a 2.0 to 2.5 consistent rating, it can always be explained as being a new night for wrestling fans with tough competition from Seinfeld and Friends.
He's always thinking, is Kev.
Yeah, he's always thinking.
I'm a raised no fool with that boy.
That Nitro, December 1st, is obviously where they make the Bischoff Zbysko match official. You know, Larry doing the promo in his very chic denim shirt.
Yeah, this thing, like, up until this point, like Larry's been like pretty fucking over with the crowd as he's trying to go after Scott Hall. And you know, Scott Hall's just not, he keeps calling him out for a match, let's go Scott, you know, and he could call, you know, Yellow Belly and all that stuff, and Scott refuses, and then they basically decide, like, I guess they're not going to go with that angle and they're going to go with Bischoff instead. But saying that though, Bischoff is really great at this time when I think it's Dylan who's come back now.
Dylan, yeah,
JJ Dylan comes back and he makes the announcement that he's going to fight Larry, I'm going to make it so that Nitro's on the line and everything, and just Bischoff's face as he's trying to stumble for his words, trying to figure out what to say. And like, Bischoff's good when he's on top, when in terms of his character, when he's on top and
that's what that woman said at the golf club.
When he's on top, and, you know, and he's like, it's good to be king and all that stuff. Bischoff excels when the screws are starting to turn on him and his back's against the wall and he's starting to get screwed with. That's when Bischoff comes out as like a superb performer with like the looks that he gives. Bischoff's fantastic in this, and like the crowd are absolutely going for it. They want to see Larry Zbysko kick this guy's ass.
Also on the show, Chris Benoit beats Billy Kidman in a good match. The Flock angle, which started the previous week with a sick boy against Benoit, continues here, and great stuff where the Flock just comes into the ring, beats the shit out of Benoit and Raven, who just kind of, again, it's supposed to be Benoit and Raven, basically, but he always keeps getting a Flock member to take the match for him. It's just this one great part where the Flock is all just beating the shit out of Benoit, Raven just gets in the ring and sits in the corner, does nothing, and the whole crowd's chanting, Raven sucks. It's like, that's fucking great right there. The main event is DDP versus Kurt Hennig with a DQ finish when the entire NWO comes in with Savage KOing Page with the US title belt, and Hogan gives him two diamond cutters, including after he puts the Sting mask on him and gives him a diamond cutter on the world title, which is pretty cool. I believe this is the second time the dummy comes through. For whatever reason, Bret Hart's name wasn't mentioned at all on Nitro this week. Sign of things to come. Poor Bret, it's only been 3 weeks in. Over on Raw the same night, they showed even more Montreal footage. This is the exclusive footage of Bret's face and nothing else. As you mentioned off mic, Kieran, this is where it's also vague what they're trying to allude to here. It's not really all that clear. As wrestling fans, from our perspective, we mentioned this in our Survivor Series retrospective a couple of weeks ago. Just watching the show alone, I couldn't really interpret what was actually happening. And to be quite honest, none of this on Raw really cleared it up for me.
No, they say like, oh, make your own mind up. And they just show Sean get on the sharpshooter, and then Earl doesn't take instruction. He just calls for the bell. And it's like, well, this is obviously before tap outs are really prevalent. So it's like just another, well, I guess, did he submit?
To us in theory, he could have submitted. And he's sat there thinking, what is there really for us to make our mind up about? Because you haven't really told us what Vince did.
It was trying never clear to walk on that line and that Vince into what's real and what's not. But again, he can't expressly say it.
Yeah, and then they show just Bret smashing all the monitors. So it's really just, okay, he lost and threw a fit, did he? I don't know.
Superheated, Steve Austin drove into the arena in his pickup truck and got on the hood and drank a beer during the Rocky Maivia Vader match.
Oh god, he was so over.
The crowd reaction to Austin as a face and Rocky as a heel was absolutely incredible, as Dave Meltzer.
Rock has been an absolute standout for crowd attention as a heel for all this quarter. Like, he's up until this point, up until the challenge with Austin, he's really done nothing at all. He's got stunned once and he's just
tapped out to Shamrock at Survivor Series.
Yeah, he's done absolutely nothing. Just, you know, one of the crew kind of thing. Might as well be Karma. But all the way through, he gets super heat. There's Rocky sucks every single.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only thing they're chanting when the Nation are out there. And they noticed.
Yeah, he's a shining diamond, and it's pretty obvious here. The main event is Jim Neidhart, that classic babyface, against Triple H. This is notable just for one thing that I want to get in here. Obviously, we get the scene where, you know, DX runs in, Sarge runs in because they're building up the boot camp match with the Generation X. Sarge gets on the Cobra Clutch on Triple H while Shamrock runs in, belly to belly, Sean, and puts him in the ankle lock, and Sean's got the fucking lollipop in his mouth as he's tapping out. It's like, you fucking prick. Nitro did a 3.8 to Raw's 3.0. So again, the pattern here is pretty much exactly what it's been at the start of this this quarter.
Though for a Jim Neidhart Triple H main event, they should be thanking their lucky stars they drew a
3. I was going to say, a 3.0 for that. Hogan is trying to get Yokozuna into WCW. Remember, he still has a win he needs to get back. The Interrogator push is being put on the back burner. They're originally giving him the monster push for a program with The Undertaker, but it appears that direction has changed. Thank God.
Is he Kurgan yet?
He is Kurgan now.
He's Kurgan.
He's
okay.
Kurgan the Interrogator.
Oh. Yes. And Jackal in his fantastic chic leather suit that he wears. Kane versus Ahmed Johnson for the next pay-per-view was cancelled when Ahmed flipped his rental car 3 times and he won't be back until after Christmas. Back on that shelf. Don't let any dust collect, Ahmed. McMahon, to soothe the hard feelings, offered Owen Hart a huge raise to return in a more prominent role as a singles headliner to work against Shawn Michaels. He also offered Davey Boy Smith some form of a release opportunity after Smith came through knee surgery, and Jim Neidhart, who wasn't under contract with the WWF, followed Bret in making the move to WCW.
Yeah, so just to go back on the Neidhart stuff, this is all when they're talking about how DX has destroyed the Hart Foundation. Sean makes some quip about where's Davey Boy, and Anvil says Davey Boy's got a knee injury, and he goes, oh, one of those knee injuries. What a dick.
Amazing. That Sunday, December 7th, the Generation X in your house. 6,358 fans in the building, a 0.4 buy rate for 112,000 buys, the worst buy rate of the year. A total knockoff of the sold out show, which was equally poorly bought at the start of the year. Shit show. Not much to say about it. An absolutely shit show, to be quite honest. Only notable for Owen Hart's return at the end, shoving Shawn Michaels off the apron into the table. Fantastic bump. Then Owen just jumps on his face and starts pounding the fuck out of him at the end. So, great ending, but the rest of this show is dog ugly.
Oh, it's awful. The only other good thing you get is Austin with the pickup truck again.
Oh, yeah.
Showing
yeah.
just how a monster over he is. But you can tell from watching it. I watched it back not too long ago, and you can still tell there. The pickup truck is part of the smoke and mirrors with Austin. They're still having to nurse him back. He's still not. I think all the shenanigans involved from sort of his entrance through to the end of the match, I think it still runs less than 10 minutes, so they're still having to nurse him and be careful with him from an in-ring standpoint.
That Sean bump through the table was a thing of beauty.
That was amazing.
Oh, Stone Cold. Owen Hart, try it. Going for it, but no. Oh, well.
The next night, December 8th, on Nitro, the lights go out constantly on the NWO members throughout the show. Even during matches, lights come back on and guys are just lying dead in the ring. The crowd is pretty much dead for the whole show until the finish. When Paige hit the Diamond Cutter, the whole crowd turned to the back for the run-in.
Oh,
which is exactly what happened. A Sting mannequin, of course, then sped down from the ceiling through the ring once again. When they went up to beat the doll, the dummy unmasked, revealing the real Sting, and who was, of course, unable to unhook himself while beating up the NWO, but he kept dropping guys while Hogan wouldn't get in the ring.
The kind of climax of like the previous 2 weeks of just dropping this dummy down, and they did actually a pretty good job of it. Even though the dummy goes absolutely through the ring this time, the head's not sticking out, and then by the time they drag him up, you can tell it's not a dummy anymore. You can tell it's like just someone playing dead, just by that how more lifelike the limbs look. But they do like a really good job of carrying him over and like draping him over the ropes, making it look like it's a dummy. And Hogan's just like doing that thing where he talks a little too long.
Oh, way too long.
He talks way too long. And just like when Hogan like pulls like the fake mask off and it's just Sting, he just stands up. It's like there's it doesn't get old. It doesn't get old. But every time Sting just comes back to kick these guys' ass, it's just entertaining. The only unfortunate thing is that the poor bastard can't uncouple himself.
He can't unhook himself.
So he's like, fuck it. Yeah, everyone else would just like falter, I guess, at that point.
It's only Bagwell.
Yeah, exactly. He goes, fuck it. He's just going to fight everyone anyway.
Over on Raw, Raw is Jerry Springer, as Matt calls it. 14 minutes of wrestling on the whole 2 hour show. McMahon, who was heavily booed coming out, comes out and begins a heel turn in confronting Steve Austin, making it clear he expected Austin to do as he said since he was his boss. This is of course alluding to the fact that he wants him to defend the Intercontinental title again against Rocky Maivia later tonight. Shawn Michaels, however, plays strip poker for about 30 minutes during this show, including drinking Jack Daniels and smoking a cigar, getting down to his BVDs, and actually putting his hand on and shaking whatever it was he had in
tickles
there.
Tickles his balls.
Tickles his bollocks right in front of the camera. It's amazing. One foot on Thrasher, the headbangers, and the other hand just slapping his balls around.
Jesus.
Fucking amazing. Goldust flashes Vader on this show. Sable removes a potato sack to reveal a very revealing bikini. Salvatore Sincere is referred to as Tom Brandy, a jabroni, by Mark Mero before he makes his triumphant comeback in the babyface turn that the whole world was waiting for. And in the main event, Austin vacates the belt to Rocky Maivia. He's got bigger fish to fry.
Bigger fish to fry. Yeah.
Okay, and of course, the closing scene when Austin hits the ring again and then runs the ropes while Vince is on the apron and Vince takes the pratfall is brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant stuff. So yeah, with all of that, Nitro does a 4.2 to Raw's 3.0. So Raw hovering around the same mark here. Bit of stability for the last... pretty much ever since Montreal, as a matter of fact. Mm. Hovering around that 3.0. The aftermath of this Raw is interesting. However, the original plan was for Austin to lose the belt at the pay-per-view to Rocky Maivia. When he refused, a compromise was worked out where instead he got over the defiant anti-establishment role, Maivia got the belt, and Austin didn't have to do a job. As best we can tell, there was no heat regarding what ended up happening, as everybody involved in the decision-making process was comfortable with the compromise.
So they should be, because the alternative was fucking stupid.
What about those time-honored traditions, Carl?
Well...
Yeah, but it just worked for everyone. It worked for Austin, the character. It worked for Rock and his character, the shitty...
What's great, yeah.
Yeah, the shitty, to some extent, sort of snivelling heel at this point. Yeah.
The greatest Intercontinental Champion that
ever was.
Yeah, it's great going forward because this is the start now. This is like where the turn comes of him acting like he is the man, which is just great based on the fact that he didn't win the belt in the first place. He like comes out acting like he's Ric Flair and stuff.
I've read
great.
The episode yet when Austin's in the production truck
and he puts the Rocky Sucks on the screen.
Rocky Sucks on the screen, and they cut his mic off a few times, which I thought they shouldn't have done. They should have messed with the lights something, because you couldn't actually hear what Rock was saying when he calls himself the People's Champ the first time. Wildly entertaining.
December 9th, the day after these Nitro and Raws, Norton, Rude, Bagwell, Luger, and Arn Anderson were at a hotel bar drinking about 1 a.m. when a fan bumped into Norton and a brawl broke out. Rude was apparently rather vociferous with the police about arresting both the fans for starting the fight, and apparently things got out of control with Rude to the point where he was hit with a nightstick, maced by police, arrested, and spent the night in jail.
He wasn't disrobing a prisoner.
Give him a look at the sexiest man alive. December 14th, there's a WWF house show in Memphis. The scheduled main event of Lawler and Jarrett versus Michaels and Helmsley never took place. There's an unruly crowd all show anyway because they were drinking. Michaels was hit with a few cokes and a large wad of tobacco juice nailed Helmsley in the face, at which point Michaels grabbed the mic and said, "That just cost you your main event," and walked out the ring with Helmsley in China, and the show ended without the match ever taking place. December 15th on Raw, the next night. This is a taped show. This is where we get McMahon's big promo talking about the WF was changing because they want to entertain the wrestling fans in what he described as a more contemporary manner. This is the Vince Russo bullshit speak about good guys and bad guys.
Yeah. Just nauseating.
If Vince wasn't a heel in your mind yet, by the time he cuts this promo, you just, you know, detest the man.
Why do it? Because it's so real. We're going to tell you we're changing. Just it's so nauseating.
To me, it just screams of a desperate nature again. Well, it's that sense of, you know, this is how desperate it is. We've got to tell you it's a more realistic contemporary product because you're not smart enough to figure it out on your own.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's obviously the intention is they're trying to differentiate themselves because they realise WCW can't go mano a mano with them in the risque stakes, but. Can't you just show us that in your products rather than you have to tell us? And then coming from him who's now going heel, or it's just so fucking
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because he's trying to state that, you know, WCW is a wrestling company and they're sports entertainment, hence why he does like all the fucking comparisons to Seinfeld and King of the Hill and all that
stuff. We make movies.
It's all an entree to what they're really about.
Yeah. The thing about the promo is he makes the big point about, you know, good guys and bad guys being cliche, but it's like, hang on, you've still got heels on faces. I just don't understand why you said that. It's annoyed me.
Undertaker blocks Kane's slap for the first time after Kane's just been slapping for weeks trying to dare him into the match. But after he blocks the slap, he walks away. Also sees of another thing that would come to pass in the new year. The Nation's doing a promo, Farouk starts to talk, and The Rock tells him to shut up because the champ is talking. Which is the first sign.
With all due respect, the champ is talking. Yeah, and Farouk gives him the fucking what the fuck. You just farted in an elevator and now you're smiling about it. Look, it's fantastic.
We get
Luke's
a lot of
good
that.
With those looks.
He's good. Dude Love versus Billy Gunn happens here with Dude Love getting thrown off the stage. So this is the start of something as well that bleeds into the new year.
He fucking misses the table.
Misses the table into the concrete.
Owen, Mick.
Owen Hart comes from the crowd and roughs up Vince as well and rants at him a little bit here about the state of what he's done to his family and stuff like that. And of course, Steve Austin throws the Intercontinental title off a bridge.
Yeah.
I think Owen says shit, doesn't he?
Stone Cold Owen. The main event of this show is DX versus the Legion of Doom, which is fantastic. The New Age Outlaws come down, give him a beat down. This is just an effortless, fantastic performance from Shawn Michaels in this match. He looks like he's not even trying. He still outworks everybody on the show.
Yeah, no, he's good. Definitely seen this week they were going to put the Outlaws with DX. Show ends with Shawn's on the ropes and he's stroking his chin looking at the Outlaws
kind of a thing. But, although I just want to mention one of my favourite moments of the entire year is when Billy Gunn and Road Dogg get out the ring after they beat the fuck out the Legion of Doom and they just start dancing outside the ring in ridiculous fashion, and you just got to see Billy Gunn doing this wearing the South Park shirt trying to be cool. It's just fucking great. Over on Nitro December 15th, Bret Hart debuts and is announced as the referee for Eric Bischoff versus Larry Zbysko at Starrcade. And of course, this is all to build to the one line where Bret gets in about how no one knows more than he does what it's like to get screwed over by a referee, which gets a great reaction. He comes in, he does his line, he goes, and that's the end of Bret on Nitro.
This promo fucking goes nowhere really fast. I mean, it's like, and then just the segment just drags for like in about 5 minutes, I think, or something like that. It's like Bischoff's just doing this thing where he's like, Bret, 7.5 million, you know, and he's just going to all these folks, Bret, just looking at him, and just Bret's just staring at him going like, I'm not going to do you any favours. And you're like, right. And then he just keeps going, Bret, 7.5, it just goes on and on and on. It's like, and Bret just looks so fucking awkward, and he just turns and looks at the crowd and just kind of gestures to get some reaction because the crowd have just gone dead.
An auspicious debut.
It almost seems like they might not have planned that promo.
Nah, it'll get better.
Got to.
Yeah. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt and we'll see how this goes.
It's like Yaz said, the only way is up.
About a half dozen fans at different points in the show hop the guardrail. The main event was Ric Flair beating Kurt Hennig in a 17-second match because Ric Flair had an injured ankle. Of course, the NWO all interferes. Luger, Page, and the Steiners come out for the save, and fans were hitting the ring at this point. Sting was in the rafters, and after the lights went off, they came back on, and he was on the WCW sign. The show ended with Sting walking towards the ring. The show was supposed to finish with Sting laying every member of the NWO out except Hogan and Bischoff, but because so many fans were hitting the ring, Sting didn't make it into the ring on time. When Bischoff, in the ring, realised the angle was blown, he very audibly swore he had his head in his hands when the camera came back on him after the swearing and the acknowledgement that the angle was blown. He's just walking around with his hands on his head because he knows we've just fucked this. We've just fucked the big angle. Because the whole idea is the symbolism of Sting standing above the WCW logo, the Great Shot, which they get. And of course, Sting's supposed to like come down and do it, but Sting doesn't want to come to the ring because all the fans are hitting the ring. So Bischoff's just standing there, walking around, head in his hands, just come like walk like fuck, like this whole thing's been fucked up. It's like these fans are getting out of control.
This just thing, and this isn't the only time it happens. It happens again, two more times in the next few weeks where Nitro wraps, but the angles run too long. This is the first one. With just, as you said, Sting, not wanting to go into the ring just yet. And just, it airs, and you're like, what the hell happens? I think it's like the next week, he's on top of the sign again, and they've got like the fucking
zip wire.
And he's going like, Sting's on there, he's going to go on the zip wire. And he starts zipping down. And as he's zipping down, and he just about passes the ropes, end of Nitro. And it's like, we don't even see him fucking land, dismount, whatever you fucking want to call it. And I'm just there with my head in my hands going, what the fuck is that?
In fairness, it's the go home show for Starrcade, and it's like Sting's about to get his hands on Hogan, and then we cut away.
It's the tease.
We'll defend that one.
To make you want to buy the pay-per-view.
Well, it isn't the go-home show, is that the one you're going
That's
on to
the
next?
Following week, yeah. Yeah. Nitro does a 4.1 to Raw's 2.7. Ooh. The same day as the Raw and Nitro, of course we mentioned Raw was taped, they did a house show in Little Rock. This is one day after the situation in Memphis with Shawn walking out in the main event. Michaels and Helmsley come to the ring and began riling up the crowd that was already mad about a very poor undercard. Naturally, they became target practice once again, and when a piece of paper hit Michaels, he told the crowd that they had just lost their main event and walked out with Helmsley in China. Fans, thinking it was just part of the act, didn't react right away. The ring announcer said they had refused to come out and the show was over. At this point, a riot started, with chairs and whiskey bottles being thrown everywhere, including at police, who were trying to get the crowd out the building. The situation got so bad that the police had to spray the building with tear gas to get the fans
Jesus
outside.
Fucking Christ.
13 arrests were made, one was taken to the hospital.
Sean can get away with anything, it seems.
Oh, sure can.
Shouldn't have thrown that paper.
Oh, man. I would have given anything just someone to throw Sean out into that fucking crowd at that moment. That'd have been great.
What a heel.
Yeah.
He had what you call that white heat.
Yes. However, as best we can tell, the plan now is for Nitro to remain as is on Mondays, as in why mess with a successful formula, and the new formula show will be NWO Thunder on Thursdays. So Big Kev got his way.
Wow.
So there you go. The plan has changed in the space of 2 weeks. The next week on Raw, December 22nd, DX drops their robes and they've got Merry Christmas written on their butt cheeks. So good, you know, wholesome family viewing there. Sergeant Slaughter makes the Battle of DX in the main event. HBK loses the European Championship to Triple H in a complete farce of a match where...
Teasing throughout the show that this might be the demise of DX. Half-hearted argument backstage, and then obviously the Schmoz finish with Sean just lying down for him.
Meltzer says, for those keeping score, that makes of Michaels' 9 championship reigns, he's done exactly 2 jobs to drop them, both in situations where it was a short turnaround before he got it right back. He was of course supposed to lose the European title to Owen Hart, that's what was agreed upon, and of course Sean said, nah. Santa Claus gets a Stone Cold Stunner on this show as well. And the UH Outlaws beat up Mankind in the Boiler Room, so they've gone through Dude and Mankind.
And since last week they've done a massive U-turn on the Outlaws joining DX, which,
yeah,
after teasing it 1 week, next week they're very anti, don't take credit for being up LOD, it's all us, fuck you Outlaws. So
yeah,
don't know what happened then. I don't think Sean, because it wouldn't matter to him, but I see Triple H seeing 2 more mid-carders who
are more charismatic,
yeah,
than he is.
So something for Billy Gunn. So yeah, I definitely smell a Trips ruse there.
Over on Nitro, at the 1 hour mark, the NWO took over and spent about 20 minutes tearing down all the WCW equipment and replacing it with the new NWO equipment. The rest of the show had new graphics package saying NWO Nitro, new lighting, new banners, and a new insignia for the entrance area. Bischoff did an interview where he gave Hulk Hogan 2 motorcycles and a limo for Christmas. Then Bischoff, Nash, and Rue took over as announcers. The show ended with yet another Bischoff and Hogan interview. This time someone bought Hogan a present which he thought was from Bischoff, but Bischoff denied it. Hogan opened the present and it was a Hogan head, and Hogan freaked out while Bret Hart laughed and Sting tries to fly in on the zip line.
This show is awful.
It's a trick.
It's fucking awful. First off, they decide to rip everything down, right? So, and it takes ages. It takes some ages to rip down all the banners, and it seems something where
Buff Bagwell's in charge, right? Because none of the
none
of the top tier guys are out, and it's just this thing of just like the crowd are just like standing there, like watching it. Some of them are like pointing to stuff. It's just this weird thing. Like as they're doing this, they're playing like the NWO tidbit. It's like new world order for life. Like not the music, just the sound bites, just the
shades of soul out.
And like, and just like Bagwell's like storm into the ring, just saying, like, cut that all down. It's just, it just drags on, and just it's all that. It's all the rubbing of Hogan, and it's atrocious. And I think they give him a ring. Like he proposes to him. Yeah. Like Bischoff gets someone near and proposes to Hogan. Hogan's like just all like fluttering, just like, oh my god. It's the bit with the present at the end. They give Hogan the present. Hogan's like, oh Bischoff, you shouldn't have. And Eric's just like, I didn't get you this. Hall? Nash, is this you? Anyway, he just pulls out his head, which is a really good replica. Just Hogan's fucking face. And he only goes, oh my fucking god. it's I hate Hogan, but I got it. His hammy acting actually works in this moment because it's so fucking ridiculous.
I love hammy Hulk Hogan because he's just like he's such a terrible cool heel that it makes him a great heel. But he's the kind of heel that you would expect to wreak havoc on the Pink Panther. You know what I mean?
The tease of this then is basically, you better cheer for Zabisco to win, otherwise
you're
having sold out, and it's going to suck every single
week. Thing's going to behead Hogan as well.
But it's just another, in many ways, it's just an example of Bischoff and being drunk on power at this point, in the sense of, you know, you talk about how long it takes to tear the signs down and all that sort of thing. It's basically just, you know, a pissing contest for Bischoff, in which he's going, I can put anything on.
Is it at that point though, and again, they're building, this is the go home show for Starrcade. They're building here on the idea of, we don't, you know, this would be, we don't want this to happen as fans. We don't want the NWO Nitro thing. And of course, the whole idea of the show is it's one big fluff job for Hogan. But in that case, I think this works, because the whole idea is this is the big hard sell of how much of a complete arsehole Hulk Hogan is, because Sting's going to get him, and just when you think he's going to get him at the end, you got to pay for Starrcade. I think, again, creatively speaking, NWO Nitro, the tearing down the set, it's balls. It's bobbins, as my good friend Tom Campbell would say. But yeah, I can see why this was put down on paper.
Completely understand the logic behind it, but
I can see the logic behind it. And if they could have actually done it well, then I think it would have been better if they did it actually for a couple more weeks and actually tried to make it so NWO, if they could do it well.
I think we're about to have an indication of why they wouldn't do it for a couple more weeks.
Yes, indeed. There is a massive indication of why they didn't do this a few weeks in a row, because if there was a chance that the NWO was going to take over Nitro, it almost surely ended on Tuesday afternoon when the ratings came in. And now the prospects for the Thursday NWO show also have to be questioned. It was the closest margin over the head-to-head period in all of 1997. Nitro at a 3.3 and Raw at a 3.15. So that's the head-to-head section. Obviously, there's 2 hours head-to-head. Nitro did a three-hour show. So overall, Nitro did about a 3.5. But the key here is that Raw did hours of 3.1 and 3.2. Nitro's last hour did a 3.0, which means that for the first time in all of 97, Raw won an entire hour, 3.2 to 3.0, which shows just what a disaster the show was for WCW, the go-home show for Starrcade.
It's funny, even before you've given the individual breakdown of those head-to-head numbers there, when you said 3.5, I found that jarring, because by and large, WCW have done a 4 or above a 4 most weeks for this quarter. And to think, you know, if you look in the traditional sense of pro wrestling, and you build and build and you get the fans anticipating Starrcade, and they're going to watch every week to see the lead into Starrcade, to have that a significant drop off like that the Monday before your biggest pay-per-view ever, it's absolutely startling. And it speaks to G's point of, if they had put a bit more thought into this NWO Nitro, we've got our own show on 6 days before Starrcade, this is what you're going to be seeing every week, as opposed to this sort of rush job, oh, we're going to have 20 minutes during the show in which we rearrange the set, then maybe those numbers would have bore a bit more fruit than they did.
It was interesting. So Raw was up a little bit.
Raw was up a little bit, yeah. 3.1 and 3.2.
So it was more
hours.
It was more people turned off. Some tuned into Raw, some just didn't watch at all.
Yeah.
So it was a bigger turn off. The moral is it's a bigger turn off for WCW rather than anything WWF are doing. It wasn't any intrigue over DX potentially splitting, or there might have been something from it. Yeah, it was a definite sign that they actually turned off fans rather than it was anything WWF doing. Although they gained a little bit, but I think that was incidental, given the degree of the drop-off. So.
Interesting little thing here that Dave Meltzer has in The Observer. He actually did it in this issue. He did a breakdown of, ever since September, the segments of where the ratings have gone up or down per person, per segment. So you can actually tell who are the responsible for the big rises and who are responsible for the big falls. The biggest winners in the ratings were Steve Austin and Ric Flair. Every time they were on the screen, the ratings would always jump up. The biggest loser in either company, anybody care to guess?
Hogan.
Hulk Hogan.
Sure.
Scott Hall.
Really? What?
Oh. Worse than the DOA. Worse than the Villanos. Worse than anybody else. Scott Hall was the biggest ratings killer for this this period of time.
Maybe you need to do a survey on that.
I think the votes are in.
He had some Zabisco stank on him, he suggested.
Yeah, possibly.
Ratings of stall.
I doff my cap.
David Boy Smith officially agreed to a deal with WCW on Christmas Day after paying the WWF $150,000 to buy out the final 32 months of his original 5-year contract. In equally huge news, Crush has also been released from his deal and is expected to go to WCW.
See, not everything Vince did was bad.
The day before Starcade, WCW received word that Kevin Nash had suffered a mild heart attack at his home in Phoenix. People were openly questioning it, believing that Nash had somehow found out the finish, as he was supposed to do the job, and everything else was simply a cover. Nash had managed to postpone his first pay-per-view match with the Giants, originally scheduled for World War III, claiming his knee hadn't recovered from surgery. But he had also told people he wasn't doing the match at Starcade for a variety of reasons, among them because he didn't think he'd been promoted correctly, and because he didn't want to do it to begin with.
So he went with heart attack.
This, of course, does lead us the next night, December 28th, WCW Starcade 97, the ultimate revenge show for World Championship Wrestling. 17,500 fans sell out the building. WCW's all-time gate record at $543,000. A 1.9 buy rate for 530,000 buys, the biggest buy rate in the history of WCW, past, present, or future. Hogan and Sting.
They fucked him.
They really did.
They bent him over and took that baseball bat and slyly slipped in his anus.
Oh, no. The show started well enough with a nice video package. That's pretty much the end of it there.
Like you say, it's the ultimate WCW revenge show in which revenge doesn't take place. I forget all six individuals involved in the match, but I believe it's Ray Traylor and the Steiners against Vincent. I can't remember who the other two are.
Randy Savage and Scott Norton. There's a good note here. You mentioned it there. Conan, who was supposed to be in that match, called and said his girlfriend had given birth to a premature stillborn child and therefore he couldn't leave Mexico. The company wanted Randy Savage to fill the spot, and Savage would only agree to replace Conan if he got the pin, because it was so low on the card and he's a main eventer. WCW was in fact supposed to go over in that match. He also refused to just beat Ray Traylor because he considered him a jobber.
So there's number one on the hit list. They've lost.
Number two, because Giant was supposed to beat Nash in the other revenge match. Two
okay.
down.
Okay, two down. Let's go for number three.
Bagwell pins
Luger. Buff Bagwell shows he is the stuff when he beats the total package.
It might be his career highlight outside of Steve Austin putting him over on the good, the bad, and the buff trailer.
I thought you were going to say it was his only career highlight outside the neck injury.
Oh, come on, Carl. The obvious thing to talk about here is the finish of Hogan and Sting, which is all that really mattered on this show. In Meltzer's words, you can mistime a ref bump, you can blow a move, but how do you blow a fast count? The only reasonable answer to this is Hogan changed the spot in the ring, and Patrick didn't want to cross Hogan because of all the power he wields, even though the plan was different. A bad, bad, bad fucking horrible show. Brett comes out and reverses the decision.
You can barely hear
you
him over
barely
the high
hear
smoke.
Him. It looks fucking horrible after Hogan pretty much just pinned him clean.
He beat him clean.
It sucks ass. It's just fucking terrible.
And then all the WCW team jump in the ring like a bunch of losers.
Oh, this is the thing. Like, right, we go through this whole like shitty scenario, as you said, with the fast count that wasn't a fast count. You know, it makes Sting look like a fucking dick, makes Bret Hart look like a dick. And then, you know, he turns around, he makes Hogan tap. And as you said, the entire roster comes out to celebrate. And I'm sat there watching this. as, you know, Giant's lifting Sting up and everyone's just celebrating. And we're talking about some fucking dregs in this company, right? There's a lot of no marks in there. And I'm sad they're looking...
Or, as Gene Okerlund openly called them in an interview, the rank and file.
Oh my god. These guys all turn up and all celebrating with Sting. And I was just thinking, like, if only these 50 guys just managed to come together and work together, they might have beaten the NWO fucking a year and a half ago, for fuck's sake. Like, who the fuck are all these assholes coming out all of a sudden? Where the fuck were any of these guys?
Where were you,
when
high
DDP
voltage?
DDP was getting his ass whipped weeks earlier.
Told you, it's DDP.
Let's not forget, to start that match, Sting just does a standard entrance like he's anybody.
The crowd's getting boring 2 minutes in. Oh. Again, there is that feeling, and the show sucks, like we said, it's a bad show all throughout, before that match even starts, but the magic isn't in the air for this match when it begins. Like, a couple minutes in, it feels like the atmosphere is not there. It's a bad crowd anyway, to be quite honest. Again, and they get dealt shit sandwich after shit sandwich. Nash isn't there. The babyfaces keep losing on this revenge show. Raven was replaced by Satin, which they knew was going to happen all along, but they advertised Raven versus Benoit for weeks knowing it wasn't going to happen. Mm. And Benoit, by the way, cuts a promo on this show that makes fucking Ken Shamrock look like Dusty Rhodes. It's awful. Larry Zbysko wins.
Yeah.
Beats Eric Bischoff in another match that has a very questionable finish. Meltzer notes here, as for the big question about Thursday, well, if you've got any good ideas for a Thursday show, email them to Eric quickly. And if you've heard any rumours of the concept, they're only rumours because everything right now is up in the air. Well, a year of planning for this dual brand thing out the window. One rating.
It's funny how that happens.
Yeah.
Bagwell's the common denominator.
All I can say is, it's the fog of war.
Bischoff does the cheap word. Scott Hall, this is Scott Hall's influence for the Starcade show, comes out, slips some like metal object into Eric Bischoff's fucking kick pad. Eric then kicks Zbysko in the face, and the piece of metal goes flying out of his kick pad out into the crowd, which Brett sees. His eyes follow it and it goes all the way in, right? Then Bischoff just like I think he puts his foot on his chest and he's like celebrating, like, I won, right? And Brett's just looking at him the entire time saying, I've just fucking seen the thing just fly out of your foot. So, like, he starts, like, he punches Bischoff and then, like, punches Hall. And, like, as he's, like, beating up Scott Hall, Zbysko's choking out freaking Bischoff. These two instances are happening on completely opposite sides of the ring. Zbysko finishes choking him, gets up, Bret Hart raises his hands. And it's like, no pin, no submission.
No knockout.
It's like...
Yeah, pretty much.
Brett is a shit referee.
He's bitter, I'm telling you.
Meltzer there referenced about any ideas for a Thursday show, send them to Eric. You mentioned earlier about it's all gone out the window off the back of one bad rating. Just the fact of the matter is, Bischoff had a plan for Starcade with Sting and Hogan. He had no genuine plan after that. He had maybe the embers of an idea for a brand split in the Thursday show, but he didn't really have proper concrete plans after this. It changed from week to week. And you can see from the sort of the fallout of this show that, you know, the way that the card has panned out, he was focusing entirely on Sting and Hogan and everything else, including Bret Hart, who you've just paid $3 million a year to, is just a bystander.
Thing is, in terms of like the whole Hogan Sting thing being shit, it doesn't end yet.
The next night, on Nitro, Bret Hart comes out and does a promo challenging Hulk Hogan. Calls himself the best there is, best was, best there ever will be. Ric Flair takes exception in an interview where he quotes Dave Meltzer from the Baltimore Sun calling him the best ever, which is just fantastic. With the finish from the previous night messed up, and thus unable to ever really be shown on television, they do Sting vs. Hogan rematch about 6 minutes into the match, just as referee Randy Anderson is bumped, the show abruptly goes off the air.
Yeah, how do all you fans feel they paid for Starcade?
Yeah, it's not just only that, as you said, like, to just do the instant rematch on the following, the following show, the very next day. But it's the fact that the show ends in the middle of the fucking match, and I'm just watching this. I think it's like on the Sting comeback.
It is. It's the Sting of Splash.
Yeah. So on the Sting of Splash, and then the show just fucking ends, and I'm just sat there, just like, what the flying fuck's going on? It's like, Jesus Christ.
And the wheels have started to come off.
Well, hang on, though, because this was intentional. The idea for this was, obviously, keep in mind, Thunder's debuting. The idea is they're going to show the rest of the match on Thunder. So that's the idea that they're going with. Off-air, of course, in the building, they filmed the rest of it. Off-air, Nick Patrick did a run-in as the referee after Randy Anderson was bumped. Hogan again hit the leg drop, and Patrick did the count. And just as he was hitting three for the super-fast count, Sting kicked out, although it was basically a dead heat as to which happened first. Sting got up and clotheslines Nick Patrick. The match continued with Sting getting Hogan in the Scorpion, Anderson reviving and calling for the bell. To make things even weirder, when Nick Patrick was again supposed to give the fast count, and this is after all the pressure of having screwed up the previous night, it still wasn't fast.
The inmates run the asylum.
It's fucking that contract, man. Fucking bane of this fucking war.
What's his contract got to do with pressurizing Nick Patrick to fuck up two
Because I guess counts? Patrick, like you said, Patrick, I guess, thought, if I don't do what Hogan says, I can be out my arse.
That's a nice contract. That's just Hogan's overall influence on the company, though. It's not Hogan's contract.
Yeah, but again, that's
weakness,
that's
lack of structure.
But this is the fucking guy who got his mate Beefcake in countless times. Hogan's contract was very shortly coming up. Again, he's in the catbird seat. Especially, we mentioned before as well, the whole escape from Devil's Island thing. There's pressure on Bischoff to keep him and do what he wants because it's Hogan. And here, again, look at this buy rate. He's got the juice here, it seems like.
Oh, he's got the juice.
Oh, no, he's got the juice.
He's always got the juice.
Over on Raw, the same night, December 29th, Steve Austin stuns Baby New Year, which is Goldust, dressed up. What a fucking weird, horrible segment this is, outside of slamming the door with the crapper on Goldust's face, and then he gives him a stun, and then he just jumps into the fucking thing and takes the bump, which is great. Ken Shamrock beats Colin Mustafa with the ankle lock. After the match, The Rock comes out and says Shamrock next week will have to face Farouk. Farouk looks obviously majorly pissed off at The Rock acting like he was in control, ordering him around. Again, Rock here goes, Kama, D-Lo, know your role, come with me, Farouk. Get ready for next week. They also have the second video where Dude Love morphs into Mankind, who morphs into Cactus Jack, returns to face the New Age Outlaws in the most fucking illogical DQ I've ever seen. So basically, he comes out with a barbed wire baseball bat. They start beating the shit out of each other with weapons, chair shots to the head, Mankind gets a double arm DDT, Billy Gunn runs in, and that's a disqualification. I don't know. Why not?
We've got attitude.
Chainsaw Charlie makes his debut coming out of the wooden box to save Cactus Jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of illogical, though I understand, in fairness to the company, this is what Terry wanted to do.
This is his idea for some reason, yeah.
They always said he was middle-aged and crazy.
DOA, Flashpunk, Scott Taylor and the Headbangers were in the ring to destroy Kane. They do talk about there's a plot to destroy Kane, and all throughout this show, The Undertaker makes the save, fighting side by side with Kane till they cleared the ring. They had another stare down before Taker walked away. It has not gone unnoticed internally that Kane is getting over more as a babyface. He's been booked so well and looks so fucking awesome as this.
Been booked as the dominant monster.
The thing is, you got
the red lights, the mask, which looks like Michael Myers. It's awesome.
The but it's as well, like, okay, the crowd's sitting down, I think they see some jobber match, and then, oh, thank God the lights go off, this guy's getting his ass kicked, and we don't have to sit through some fucking shit match. So, you know, of course you're going to get cheered.
Yeah. Jim Cornette's promo on this week's Raw is the one where he talks about how he's going to bring back some wrestling. It's a great promo. It's going on in wrestling right now, and how he doesn't like sports entertainment and flying donkeys, and he doesn't see any wrestling anymore, and it's up to him to bring back some tradition. It gets back to the crowd who are all cheering wildly for this, what is supposed to be a heel promo from the Out of Touch Cornette, although this would lead to some real shit in the new year.
One thing I just love, I think if there was one thing I could bring back to wrestling today, would be Jim Cornette. You know, like how some, like, you have some of those programs, they're usually kind of on late on BBC, where like they'll have like the main program and then they'll have like the sign language guy in the corner. I kind of want like the same thing, where I'm watching the current Raw and then have Jim Cornette in the corner running commentary. Well, that fucking sucks.
You can have like alternative commentary. You can listen to the commentary and we'll just put Jim Cornette on in the corner.
He wouldn't be short of material. Fuck me.
Owen Hart versus Shawn Michaels main event to this show, where Triple H gets involved, crutch to the head, DQ finish here on Raw. However, the big story is they start the show-long Mike Tyson tease, which came off as a pathetic ratings ploy because of how it was handled, and watching the crowd groan at the end of the show when they did the payoff. They kept teasing the name over and over, saying the WWF was entering into negotiations to get Tyson at WrestleMania. So Meltzer, in his on-the-day recap, thinks this is just a cheap ratings ploy. He doesn't actually know that there's something coming around the corner. But how appropriate, one day after Starrcade, where they completely fuck the dog, Tyson's announced the next night.
It was, yeah, it was. The tease throughout the show was a big announcement, and then the actual the payoff was were in negotiations.
We're talking about getting to Mania, and Lawler immediately responded, "Who's he going to fight at WrestleMania?" And JR's like, "I don't know if he's going to be fighting anybody." But of course, we talk about the ratings here. A huge night for ratings. Nitro does a 4.6, coming off Starrcade with a Hogan Sting main event, and Raw does a 3.7. Mm. It's biggest number of head-to-head competition in quite some time. A combined 8.3 for the final night of the year for wrestling television. So, what an absolutely fascinating quarter, what an absolutely fascinating year. Thoughts on this year as we head into 1998?
The first thing that springs to my mind is what I referenced earlier, in the sense of the wrestling business as a whole now. It seems, from a number standpoint, is in much better health. You wouldn't guess it from the number there because of the intrigue from post-Starrcade, but it's the point where the wheels are starting to come off, and the lack of proper oversight and proper planning post-Starrcade. Obviously, we'll see it develop in the next podcast, in the next quarter, but the chickens are starting to come home to roost for the WCW, whereas the WWF have at least got that nucleus now. You know, they've got The Rock developing into the character we're all going to come to know and love. Steve Austin is over like Rover. You know, you've got DX, you've got the Outlaws coming into their own and being much more interesting characters than they ever were as the Roadie and Rockabilly. Whilst Vince was sort of throwing things at the wall prior to this in sort of a panicky mode to try and just go for anything that could draw a rating, there's a sense to me at least that now they've got their identity, they've got their direction, and the fault lines between the two companies are very much drawn, and we'll see in the next podcast how that pans out for the two.
Yeah, I totally agree. For me, the turning point in terms of the WWF identity was Brett leaving Survivor Series.
Of course it was,
I mean, I said the next night it's the first WWF Attitude vignette, but just the clarity of the direction, especially at the top of the card, the real sense of, whether you like Brett, you prefer Brett or Shawn, your feelings on that. When one of them left, it really kind of focused attention in the direction. DX at the top of the card, they're the main heels, they're running the show, and it's Steve Austin bubbling underneath, and a much more cohesive direction feel to it from that point forwards. Whether you like that or not is open to your own interpretation, but in terms of a show, I mean I'm just despite the shit on Raw each week, there was still around. I just love the shows. I think there's so much fun that, watching this week's Raw last night was kind of depressing. And WCW's kind of now hit its pinnacle. WWE is now just kind of, it's really turned the corner now, and it's moving towards the future that we'll get to in future podcasts.
Personally, from an episode by episode basis, I think Nitro has got a much better product than Raw overall. You get in Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit trying to get to Raven, Henning versus Ric Flair, you know, Larry doing stuff with Scott Hall, or DDP Savage, all outside of what the main angle is, which is Sting, headhunting Hogan. WCW had their target, whilst WWF is completely confused by what they're doing with Brett and Shawn, like who's babyface, what's going on, because Austin's in the mid-card. Once that whole shit goes down, it does all change, because you're starting to now see the direction appearing in WWF, and they now know they're now ready to push the main babyface, which is Austin. In the meantime, WCW, which had like the hottest angle they've had, managed to blow it on the night.
Quality wise, you know, the WCW undercard smokes WWF. Nitro had that formulaic feel to it. It was rinse repeat, we said before, the Bischoff with the Sting tease.
Yeah.
And by the end of the year, with WWF kind of finding themselves and a bit of freedom with a new direction, their shows seemed a lot more fluid and organic at points, with the positioning of like Austin throughout the shows and things like that.
What are your abiding memories? And your abiding memories are from the sort of the prize fights, if you will. You know, the names on the marquee at the end of the day. So when you've got Hogan and Hall and Nash, and yes, they're still doing good numbers, they've still done that great buy rate, there's a staleness to it. You know, it's often that argument, and I'm stealing from the death of WCW a bit here, but I think it's a pertinent point. It's not necessarily old versus young in terms of natural age of the people involved. It's fresh versus stale. And in WCW, there is a staleness at the top of the card. In the WWF, it's fresh. And that will bear fruit over the coming months.
by the end of this year, WCW does still have the momentum. We talk about fresh versus stale there. Yes, WF's going in a fresh direction, and the TV is generally more interesting just because they're going in different directions that we haven't seen before in professional wrestling, or at least on that kind of mainstream level. WCW still has the opportunity here. They've just got Brett. There is still the opportunity there for the top scene to be fresh. And we're going to see what happens with that in 1998 as we go forward in the decision for what the top viewed actually was in the first 2 months of 1998 when we return to the Monday Night War timeline. So with that said, this has been an odyssey of a show. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, f4wonline.com, for the notes that we used for this show today. And an amazing year. I love doing these timelines, and I cannot wait to return to the next one. The next one we do, we're going to be doing it in two-month increments for the year of 1998, because there are so many notes. I've already got the next three shows prepped, and there are so many notes that to give it all it's just due, we're going to space it out a little bit more. So with that said, I want to thank everybody around the table for G. John Chase.
Oh, I can't wait for the next one. We're heading to the most important era ever, the Rock era.
For Carl Jones.
Remember, you can follow me at Old Man Jones, though at my age, each tweet gets more fleeting.
And for Kieran O'Rourke.
Just like your sexual performance. At Wrestling Prophet, because you don't want to follow Carl. He sucks. He just moans about stuff. He's old, although he's younger than me. I'm not doing the next timeline one because that's when Sean gets hurt, so fuck that.
I am Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here. Talk to you next week.
Kieran, I have pills for that name.